Blog Talk Radio.
Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Are you familiar with the term misogynist? If not, a misogynist is a term that describes a man who has a passionate hatred for women, a man that has no love, no fond feelings, and no respect for any member of the female gender. The problem with this term is that sometimes many men and women use the term very, very loosely and even inappropriately. For example, some women believe that any man who is harshly critical of any aspect of women's behavior is a misogynist. That is not true. Some people believe that if a man is all about womanizing and engaging in casual sex instead of the pursuit of a long-term, emotionally profound, monogamous relationship with a woman, that this makes him a misogynist. Again, that is invalid. My guests this evening are going to join me in a detailed discussion about the notion of misogynistic behavior. And furthermore, we are going to discuss a new independent film that is set to come in theaters entitled Misogynist. Who is this man who wrote and directed a film with a title that causes so much disdain and so much controversy? His name is Michael Matteo Rossi, and tonight Michael is going to give us a few details on his upcoming film, as well as I'm going to interview two of his cast members, Danielle and Eve, as all three take time out of their very busy schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this the Alan Roger Curry of Mode 1 fame? Oh, my God.
You're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode 1, this is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Are going. I know you got a clue what you're doing. You can play brand new to all the other chicks out here, but I know what you are, baby. Look at you, getting more than just a re-up. Baby, you got all the puppets set the strings up. Baking like a good one, but I call them like I see them. I know what you are, baby.
You're
welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, January 23rd, and tonight I am going to have what I predict, and you know me and my predictions. Now, every now and then I'm wrong. Sometimes I predicted I was going to have a hot conversation and it ended up being very basic and conventional. Other times I predicted my conversation was going to be very friendly and amicable and it ended up being a very contentious conversation. Matter of fact, if you remember a few episodes ago, about what, month and a half ago, I had an episode that just featured Alan Roger Curry's most heated, most contentious interviews. Now, I doubt seriously if this interview will be what I would call a contentious interview. But I will say this. There's a lot of terms that are used by men and women that you could say are very specific, objective terms. If I call somebody a murderer, there's not too much debate about that. If you call somebody a thief, there's not too much debate about that. Then there's terms that are kind of very highly subjective, tend to be defined very differently by different people. Some words, since my show relates to dating and relationships, I'll use some terms that fall into that category. Jerk. Now, if you ask five women what their definition of a jerk is, you're probably going to get 3 to 5 different definitions. There is no one definition of a jerk or an asshole. Same with men. If you ask men, five men, what's your definition of a bitch? You're probably going to get about 3 to 5 different descriptions and definitions. That said, the term that is going to be most used tonight, because it's also the title of the movie that was written and directed by my guest, is the term misogynist. Now, if you've been a longtime fan of yours truly, you've read my books, you've listened to my shows, and you've kept up kind of with what I would call my internet presence, you would know that that is a term, believe it or not, that has been applied to me. I've had certain people, not only women, usually it's been women, but I've even had a handful of men that have said, Alan Roger Curry, he's a misogynist. And when I usually, you know, sometimes I just ignore it, and other times when I want to feel like getting into a debate, I'll just simply ask them. I'll say, well, what's your definition of a misogynist? There's some definitions I agree with, some definitions I disagree with. So I want to ask not only my main guest is the writer and director of the film entitled Misogynist, and then I'm going to be interviewing 2 female cast members from the film. So if there's at least one question I'm going to ask all 3 guests is, what is your description and definition of a misogynist? Now, the general dictionary definition of a misogynist is someone, and I emphasize someone, like a lot of people think a misogynist is automatically a man. That's not true. Matter of fact, when I did research years ago on the term misogyny and misogynist, guess which group used the term more frequently at first? It was not men. It was actually women. Yes, women. That term was applied more so to women who were hating on other women than it was men who were hating on women. Yeah, a lot of women, from the research, I don't remember all the details, but generally, if you're familiar with what's known as the Victorian era, that's the era that kind of changed a lot of the society customs we see today, particularly as it relates to women's behavior. A lot of married women were pissed that their husbands or fiancés were hooking up with basically prostitutes and call girls. So they would call them all kinds of evil names, harsh. They would insult them. And those women who were doing the criticizing and insulting were labeled misogynists. So anyway, I want to make the point that a misogynist is not always a man.
a man, although it usually is. But the general dictionary definition of a misogynist is someone who has a passionate hatred for women. Ted Bundy, if you're not familiar with him, he was this notorious serial killer of women, like Jack the Ripper. Those two, Jack the Ripper and Ted Bundy, would be clear-cut examples of misogynists. They hated women so much they wanted them dead. That's the most extreme example of misogynist, is when you hate women so much, you want them dead, or you want to see them tortured, or you want them, you know, at minimum, I would say it means you just don't really want anything to do with them. You don't want to socialize with women. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to interact with them unless you absolutely have to. You have nothing but foul things to say about them, insults to say about them. So those are the general dictionary definitions of misogynists. Now, again, a lot of people in society use those terms. I had some women who called themselves black feminists about 2 years ago that created a site dedicated to, guess who? That's right, you guessed it, yours truly. They called me a misogynistic dating coach. And that's another reason why I can't wait to have this discussion, because the main character in this film is kind of, he does what I do. He, think of Hitch, Will Smith's character Hitch, which is pretty much what I do in real life, and then bring out Hitch's real, real dark side. That's kind of the main character of this film. Now, I haven't seen the film, so I don't know how it unfolds specifically. But, yeah, let's just say the lead character, he's a controversial figure, but he is a dating coach. He is slash seduction guru, you know, a guy who's teaching other women. So anyway, I just can't wait to get into the discussion. But before we start that discussion, let me tell you who's coming up next week. Next week, now this kind of is interesting enough, loosely relates to the term misogynist. The woman I'm going to be interviewing next week, she's an opinion writer for the Huffington Post. And she wrote this piece a few weeks ago where she was very critical of pickup artists. She was very critical because there was this incident in Toronto, she's from Canada, where I guess all these wannabe pickup artists were going to hit this one shopping mall and just start, you know, approaching women and asking them out. Well, some women got wind of this plan. They told security, and security prevented all the pickup artist coaches and the students from doing this. Now, I wrote a response to her piece, which is what led to her being invited on my show, because I'm not down with that. The subject or the discussion next week will be, is approaching women representative of sexual harassment? My argument is no. It's a very emphatic no. My guess, on the other hand, to one degree or another, feels like it is. She feels like if I go to the shopping mall to buy some clothes, why should I have to be bothered with a guy trying to hit on me for a date or hit on me for sex? But my attitude is, it's not harassment until a woman says, no, I'm not interested, leave me alone, and you still keep talking to her. At that point, that's harassment. That's harassment. If you approach a woman, you let her know you want to hook up with her romantically or sexually, and she says, hey, you know, I'm married or I'm just not interested, leave me alone, and you keep talking to her, you are harassing her. But that initial approach, that is not harassment. I will argue that to the day I die. That is not harassment. I don't think it should be considered as something that's illegal. And matter of fact, it's not illegal. It's not illegal in Toronto, even though the security personnel of this mall prevented these men from doing it. How can you just tell men you can no longer approach women? What the fuck is that? If our society is moving to that direction, take me to another planet. That's all I have to say. Anyway, so that's my show next week. I know that's going to be a hot discussion. Guaranteed that's going to be a hot. You, man, that's going to be a barn burner of a discussion. I love all my listeners. Love all my listeners, the ones who listen to my show as an archive podcast. Of course, I have a little extra love for my live listeners, and I'm pissed right now. Jazz Cass, help me out. Where's everybody? Is there like an important NBA game on or something? Because normally at this time, I got about 10 to 15 people in my chat room, and only Jazz Cass is in here right now. Now, I see some people in my phone queue. I got a lot of people in my phone queue. So maybe some people are calling in to listen to the show. I have more people in my phone queue than I do people in my chat room. But maybe, you know, they got delayed. They're going to be coming later. But anyway, much love to you. Other shout-outs will be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry, my younger cousins, Arthur Ball, Maplewood, New Jersey, Christopher Curry in Detroit, J.P. Jones in Chicago, Philip Pulliam, who's in San Diego, part of my old stomping grounds. When I lived in L.A., my brother lived in San Diego. He used to go down there all the time. So Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam, the third, EVP3. EVP3 is on cloud nine. Why? Because his Seattle Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl. That's right. EVP3 is in Seattle, and his Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl. And you know what that's going to allow me to segue to. That's right. Richard Sherman. Everybody's talking about Richard Sherman. I got none but love for Richard Sherman. Nothing, nothing, nothing but love for Richard Sherman. You know, hey, if you're a competitor, not everybody has been a competitor in their life. Most people have, but not everybody. I've played sports. You know, if somebody put a mic to your face right after you won a big game, especially if there was some trash talk between you and opponent, you're going to act like Richard Sherman acted. You know, everybody wants to see everybody be all basic and conventional, like, yeah, you know, we played a hard game, and it was great, and, you know, ready to go home and hug the kids. No, that's not real. That's not real. Real is if you have a passion for the game you play, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, and you just played a hard-fought contest, and again, if there was a little jawing between you and the opponent, you are going to feel like Richard Sherman felt. And matter of fact, some audio came out today that showed that Richard Sherman went up to Michael Crabtree, and he said, hell of a game. At first, he was cordial. He said, hey, you know, this was a hell of a game, and Crabtree pushed his face away. That would piss me off, too. If I went up to my opponent and said, hell of a game, and they pushed my helmet away, oh, man, I'm talking about their mama on TV. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to be so fired up, no telling what I might say. Y'all know from listening to my radio show how provocative I can get with my conversation, my language. So anyway, I have nothing but love for the young brother named Richard Sherman. Best continued success to him. And as far as I'm concerned, there is no controversy. There is no controversy. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to take a quick intermission break, and when I get back, I will be introducing my first guest for the evening, and we're going to get this conversation started. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help them and help them and just keep, and he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people, and he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
And I need to know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh, my God, I mean,
Would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please visit www.modeone.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's modeone.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. And speaking of number one, not only do I have the number one dating and relationship show on Blog Talk Radio, got to do a little tooting on my horn here. A lot of you know I write articles, these freelance articles for what's called TheExaminer.com. Now, that's not major like, you know, whatever, TimeMagazine.com or anything like that. But I'm proud of, you know, it's a nice format. Anyway, as of last week, more and more people have been reading my articles. And last week, I not only had the most read dating advice article on TheExaminer.com, but I am now the number one most read dating advice columnist on Examiner.com. Now, I had been the number one male dating advice columnist on there for about the last year and a half, 2 years. But there was always two or three women in front of me. But now I am the number one overall dating advice columnist on Examiner.com. So I'm just throwing that out. But anyway, my first guest for the evening was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, and he graduated from San Diego State with a bachelor's in film and television and new media with an emphasis in critical studies. He has done films. He had a short film called The Last Wish that got into 5 film festivals and won 4 awards. So this is not some guy who just read a book in his basement. It's called How to Be a Filmmaker, and he just, you know, and there's some guys who do that. They just read a couple books and say, hey, I want to be a filmmaker. No, this guy studied it. He's won awards. He's been talked about in Fangora magazine, Dread Central, Yahoo News, other media outlets, and media publications. When he's not doing his work, he loves traveling, watching soccer. Ooh, he can't go to Europe and call it soccer. They'll try to beat him up. I learned that lesson anyway. He loves dancing, hiking, anything to do with the outdoors. His upcoming movie is called Misogynist. It hasn't been officially released yet, but it already has won Best Narrative Feature. Again, he's won a number of awards for The Last Wish, Sierra Nevada Award, just a number of other awards. And he's a together guy. I've listened to a couple of his interviews already. I've read some of his written interviews. He seems like a very intelligent and articulate guy. So, listeners, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, give it up for my guest, Michael Matteo Rossi.
That's great to
What's
be
up,
here,
Michael?
Colin.
You said what?
That was quite an interview. That was quite an introduction, for sure. That was. I hope I can live up to all of those things. But thank you. That was very nice of you.
We're glad to have you on my show. Now, you know what's interesting is I'm going to tell you a little story. I don't know if you've ever been curious about, like, how did he find out about my movie?
I am. I'm always curious because I get some weird messages, especially now that I came out with Misogynist. So please tell me.
Well, number one, I actually lived in L.A. for 6.5 years, and I'm actually leaning towards coming back there. But when I was in L.A., I was pursuing a career as a screenwriter and filmmaker. And then I kind of got involved in, it's a whole 3-hour story how I got involved in the dating and relationship genre. And now, in addition to being a book author and a dating coach, I'm also a hitch-like professional dating coach. But I was, some of my friends were like, Alan, you know, I know you write your books to do with dating advice and stuff, but, you know, you need to get back to writing screenplays.
Mm-hmm.
So I was tossing around different ideas for a screenplay, and one of them was kind of going to be semi-autobiographical about me. It was going to be, the premise was going to be about this talk radio show host who gets misperceived as a misogynist, but actually he really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of like my tentative working title, The Misogynist. So whenever I want to write a script, I'll go to IMDb and say, oh, let me see if anybody else has this title already. And that's how I came about your film. Because
yeah.
I was going to write a script called The Misogynist. Again, my storyline was pretty much totally, well, it probably had a couple little similarities, but for the most part, it's going to be different. But yeah, then I ran across your movie, and I said, this looks interesting. Then when I saw that it was about a guy who was essentially a dating coach, although a very dark-sided dating coach, that had me more intrigued. I was like, oh, shit, I got to interview this guy. I got to talk about this.
Well, yeah,
it's
a conversation piece in and of itself. I mean, all you need to say is, yeah, I made a film named Misogynist, and, you know, definitely opened some eyes, and it was interesting what you were saying about, you know, the definition of misogynist. There are some people who don't really know what it is. So, you know, but for the people that do, yeah, I mean, it definitely draws some attention already. So just imagine when it gets released, wide audience, and, man, we're going to have some fun, that's for sure.
Okay, well, speaking of, I'm going to hold off on that question because I do want to ask for your Michael's definition, description of misogyny. But before that, let's just touch base real quickly on when did you say to yourself, at what point in your life, whether it was middle school, high school, college, and beyond, that you knew you wanted to be involved in the entertainment industry, and more specifically, that you wanted to be a screenwriter and filmmaker?
That's a good question. I mean, growing up in L.A., you're obviously, you know, pretty much exposed to everything entertainment related, even, you know, music, film, anything. And basically, you know, my dad would show me a lot of classic films growing up as a kid. I was influenced by that. you know, the movies that I saw in the theaters, just literally getting people so engrossed in kind of just watching what's on the screen. And actually, in my early teens, in like preteens, I actually tried to do the whole acting thing a little bit. I did it on stage, all that. It was cool. But when I was about 16, 17, I told myself, you know what? I want to be right. I always loved to write. And I was like, look, I want to create my type of stories, and because I think that they're good. And again, not to toot my own horn, too. I thought, you know what? This is something that comes easy to me. I can draft out stories, intriguing stuff, you know, breathe life into characters, everything. And then basically, I knew I wanted to do it. Simple as that. I wasn't one of these people that thought I was going to be, you know, a fireman or an astronaut or something like that. I always knew I wanted to do film. Always. It just came to me, you know?
Well, that's cool, man. I remember watching an interview of Eddie Murphy years ago. Anyway, interviewing. He said something I never forgot. He said the number one thing to help him be successful was specifically deciding what he wanted to do at an early age.
Yeah.
And that's so true, because I know people in their 30s, 40s, shoot, I might dare say 50s, who still don't really, really know what they want to do. So they've had a series of jobs they've hated.
Right.
And they drive them crazy because they never just made a decision like, okay, this is my passion and I'm going to do this. And it sounds like you were in that minority of people who did know what he wanted to do at an early age. Now, who were some of your role models, either screenwriters, directors, or overall independent filmmakers? Anybody, like two or three people that were, like you said, God, I like this person's work.
Sure. Well, in terms of acting, I mean, as a kid, and to this day still, crazy respect for Robert De Niro, you know, Al Pacino, Jack Nicholson, some of the pioneers of, you know, the method acting, the intense acting, all of that. I'm into powerful films. I can enjoy comedy just as much as the next person, but seeing, you know, those films that just make you think for days after because of the performances, because of the story. So people like that, and, you know, director Stanley Kubrick, you know, with some of his films, just so mind-bending, so kind of push the edge. I'm all about pushing the edge, and I'm sure that we can get into that later. But those people really, really impressed me and said, I want to work with these people. I want to work with these type of people. And you're right, and going with what you were saying, there is an advantage of knowing what you want at an early age. I mean, because I have friends and colleagues and all that that are just starting out in their 30s and 40s doing it. And respect to them, and that's good. But, you know, I'm 26 now, and I've been doing this for 7-8 years. So, you know, by the time I'm 30, you know, I look at myself as all these building blocks, but I'm very ambitious. You know, there's no time to waste. So that's kind of my thing.
I like your attitude, Michael.
Thank you.
That's now you said an interesting phrase though that makes me feel bonded with you.
Mm-hmm.
Push the edge.
Yeah.
And see, that's kind of been the, as a book author / talk radio host / dating coach, I'm definitely for that, and I'll get kind of more into detail as we go along. Now, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come about this movie? Did you was it just a totally random thing? Did you have like a friend or acquaintance that was similar to the characters you wrote? I mean, what inspired this film? And a kind of a secondary question along with that, are you familiar with a guy named Ken Hoinsky?
I'm not really, actually, but, you know, that's, I'm guessing he's a pickup artist or something like that, but.
Go ahead, what inspired you to do this film, or write this film?
Again, good question. You know, it was a mixture of a lot of things. I mean, this film was a lot of years in the making, I feel, because of what I've experienced directly, indirectly, all of that. I'll be honest, it was senior year of high school. I was visiting San Diego State, doing the whole college visiting thing. And I remember being a 17-year-old kid, when I was on campus, the main thing that drew me was the women. The women were gorgeous. They were plentiful. It was like a 3-to-1 ratio, and, I mean, I loved it. Beautiful, near the beach, all of that. So I was hooked. I'm like, I'm going here. And basically, freshman year, one of the best years of my life still. But I kind of came across indirectly an individual that would be on campus every now and then. Me and some of my buddies that were in frats or rushing frats would kind of talk to this guy, and, you know, through word of mouth and everything, kind of started to piece together who this guy was. And basically, he's a good-looking guy, full of confidence, full of swag, all of that, and he was about the art of basically kind of controlling women. Now, I say controlling, basically having the person or the woman do anything that they want. So from that little gem, you know, I kind of extrapolated it into this story. You know, let's run with this idea. It's interesting because this guy has so much influence on others. So from that, from other experiences, everything. Now, I never was under this guy's teaching or anything like that. He kind of took it way too far from what I knew, and I didn't want to be associated with that. Because deep down, I'd like to think that I'm a good guy, respectful, and even back then, same thing. So from that idea, again, I always like to push the limit, be a little bit provocative, be edgy, go against the grain. I wrote this script, I looked at it, and I said, you know what, I got to make this. This is going to open doors, it's going to ruffle some feathers, but it will get people's attention, and it will elicit emotions, and that is my goal. Simple as that. That is my goal.
Well, it's interesting. I haven't seen the movie, but I've seen your trailer. Number one, your trailer looks very... Now, I read that this is your first feature, right?
It's my first feature. Yeah, it's my
solo
first
feature.
Baby. Yep, definitely.
So you had to have... Either you had a nice, decent budget, or you know some connections, because... Whenever I see people's films that are usually kind of their first effort, so to speak, it usually, for lack of a better term, it looks kind of amateurish, like the cinematography, set design, everything just looks kind of like, okay, yeah, that's that first guy. Your film has a look that is very high quality, you've been doing films for 20 years.
Well, thank you. I mean, and you know what? Part of that has to do with my team, my crew, all that. We squeezed every penny. We did have a budget. It wasn't that big a budget. And I will tell you that the film looks 5-10 times bigger production values than what the budget was. However, keep in mind, I had to do 7-8 years of short films, trial and error, figuring out what's working, you know, hone in on my craft. Really fine-tuned. Just a lot of practicing. A lot of practicing for the big game, for the big dance, and this was the dance. So I had to make sure everything was in place. I had to pump in the best actors who just brought it. Everybody brought their A game, and it shows. I mean, you see we got a teaser trailer and we got a theatrical trailer. You see both. And again, I'm sure we can go into it, but the main guy, title character, brings it like none other. And he did win. I don't know if I told you, but he won Best Lead Actor at a festival in L.A. Best lead.
Oh, okay. Kudos.
He has that cult-type role for sure.
Okay, now going back to something you said, number one, the guy I mentioned, I actually invited him on the show. And at first, not this show, but I wanted to interview him. But then I haven't heard from him. First he said he was down, then he just went AWOL on me. But I don't want to disparage him because I don't know everything about him. But based on just what I've read, the reason I thought he might have been some kind of indirect influence. Now, there's a lot of pickup artists. I know a lot of them personally because, again, I'm more or less in that field. I don't consider myself a pickup artist. But I do teach men how to approach women with more confidence. And Ken Hoinsky's thing where he got a lot of controversial media, I'm sure you're familiar with Kickstarter.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, he actually he caused guys like me to never be able to use Kickstarter. He went on Kickstarter, not a lot of people use it for films and, you know, just other projects. Well, he got on there looking for funding for kind of a nationwide speaking tour. And every pickup artist / seduction guru / dating coach, some stuff might overlap into other people's philosophies, and then usually they have at least one thing that's kind of their unique niche. He was encouraging men to go into bars and nightclubs and just grab women. He was encouraging a lot of physical, what he called, quick physical escalation.
Right.
And a lot of women had a negative reaction to that, and it became this firestorm to the point where, yeah, Kickstarter actually kicked them off of their site. So I want to ask you, though, about the guy who kind of loosely inspired the character of Trevor at San Diego State. You said, you made a comment. You said, yeah, he was teaching men basically how to hook up with women, but he went a little too far. Be more specific with that. What did he do, or what did he teach, what did he encourage that you felt went too far?
Okay, well, first of all, he was the main kind of influence for me creating this character. And then there was one other person, just to backtrack a little, there was one other person the summer going into senior year of high school that I kind of looked up to as like an older brother. I actually knew him. He worked for a production company, all that. I looked up to him. I thought, wow, this guy pulls girls. He's awesome, all that. But going to this other guy who really kind of implemented and pushed it further, the ideology was that you will stop at nothing to get what you want, to literally become so conditioned in your approach that, A, no women will ever affect you, and you are so kind of rock solid, it goes beyond confidence, that you can manipulate, can use, can anything, any woman, from a not-so-great-looking woman to a damn model, and you can get them. It doesn't matter how you are, it goes to kind of cult type thing. It's more than just, hey, you want a woman to sleep with, you want a woman to date, you want a woman just to be your friend. No, it's, you can take a woman, have her do anything you want, just follow my kind of routine, and it can happen. So, very intense, very in your face. I didn't want to know more than what I had heard, I'm being honest, because it seemed very, very out there, you know? Because I know about dating coaches. I mean, I've known and I've heard and this and that, but this took it to a whole other level, you know?
Yeah, well, see, I'm very curious. Like, okay, I got a couple questions. One is, again, I haven't seen the movie, so I'm going to be doing a lot of speculating, and I'll let you fill in.
I can tell you with
Trevor. But see, it's funny. I guess here's my fear. I doubt if this happens, but here it would be my fear, for lack of a better term, is to see the movie and see that everybody hates Trevor, but he might exhibit some qualities. I say, I don't think that's that bad. Okay, I'll give you a classic example.
It's kind of
the movie.
Funny.
Did you see the movie Bridesmaids?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you remember kind of the opening scene. I'm forgetting the actor's name. Is it John Hamm?
Mm-hmm. I thought a few years ago.
Well, listeners, I don't want to spoil the movie. Well, this is not a spoiler per se. The movie Bridesmaids. John Hamm was in bed with Christine Wiig, who was the star of that movie. And they basically, I think, I want to say the movie starts off with them. They had just got finished fucking. And he basically tells her, and he's not rude about it, but he basically tells her that he doesn't want her to stay and cuddle and all that shit. He basically wants her to leave.
Right.
And she's, like, disappointed. And, you know, anyway, every woman I know who saw that movie said, oh, John Hamm was a jerk. God, he was the biggest jerk in the world. And I was like, why? Because he was honest in the fact that he didn't want to be romantic with her. He just wanted to fuck her and not do it and mislead her? I said, I think that was honorable. So I got into all these debates, and as I alluded to earlier, I've had people brand me a massage, because one of my niches, I was talking about each dating coach has a niche, one thing, probably the most controversial aspect of my teachings is that I encourage men to use very provocative language with women.
Mm.
Now, that's based on a few things, so I don't just, it's not like I say, you just go up to a woman and say, hey, my name is Fred, and I want to fuck you. But at the same time, I have had approaches that were not too far from that. Like, most of the women that I've had casual sex with in my life, I had, my very first conversation with them was very X-rated. To the point where I've had, now a lot of people, of course, love that. A lot of the guys love it, even a lot of the women I know like it. But I have at least that one percentage of women that says, Alan, I think that's rude. Like, I've gone into heated debates on this very show with some guests. Like, I had this one woman who wrote this book, and she was like, Alan, I think it's disgusting that you go up to women you don't know and talk dirty to them. You're a misogynist. And see, so I that's where I get bitter about that word, because that's not misogynistic, at least not in my mind. So anyway, now it's funny that Christian Grey has this kind of, the character from 50 Shades of Grey is known as being erotically dominant with women, and women love the fuck out of Christian Grey. Without spoiling the movie, what would make Trevor significantly less likable than, say, a Christian Grey?
Well, see, it's very interesting, because there are a lot of similarities between them, actually. This was my intention, and I think that it pulled off. The greatest kind of way that I gauged audience viewership of this film already was, we had a cast crew screening, but people could bring some of their close friends, their agents, whatever. So we had, you know, over 100 people to see the film for the first time. And it was just very, very interesting hearing the reactions, hearing some laughter, some shock, all of that. Trevor, the lead character and misogynist, has, as kind of off the wall and provocative as he might be, has almost a likable, charming quality. And I'm sure that you're going to see it. You know, we can talk about that. But he is magnetic. There's no doubt about it that every time he's on screen, that's where the eyes go. There are some scenes where he is with a very attractive chick. But you know what? People are more interested in hearing what he has to say, because he just, again, it's the confidence, it's the bravado, it's just, again, I can't explain it. So trust me, there will be people that will like him, okay, sickly like him, but think, dang, there's just something about this guy. And what's interesting enough is, I'm not going to go into way too much detail, but even with one of the actresses, when they were going through it, again, he says what's on his mind, and he would totally say something like, okay, we fucked, get the fuck out of here now. And just crazy, even more off the wall. Like, again, not trying to be too vulgar, but basically, boom, you're going to sit on my dick, get me off, and you're getting the fuck out. You know, that type of shit. And
okay, well, let me stop you right there. Just based on the examples you gave, would you categorize that as misogynistic?
Well, he doesn't hate them. I mean, he wants to use them. There is a difference between, because you're right. I mean, misogynist, from my kind of view, is somebody who really hates women, somebody who has an intense dislike for women. If he was a kind of by the book misogynist, he probably, yeah. I mean, I guess he could just use them because he hates them. But it's a gray area. But that's the type of thing. But it was funny because one of the actresses was like, you know what? As kind of screwed up and messed up as this is, there's something kind of hot about it. There's something kind of sexy that this guy knows what he wants so much and is so ballsy. I mean, by definition, you know, yeah, he's a sick, twisted person in a lot of ways. But for some people, how they're going to view it is, wow, this guy isn't a pussy. He says what he wants, and that's kind of it. Is it PC? Absolutely not. Is it going to offend most? Absolutely. But for some, they're going to be like, wow, hey, at least he knows what he wants. at least he's extremely dominant. But, you know, you see it play out in the film, though. I'll say that.
See, now, if nothing else, you got me definitely curious. I want to see this film so bad. I'd pay $50 to see it tonight.
I think that it would be very interesting for you to see it.
Because I can almost already feel, again, I doubt if I maybe might not agree with him or like him in his totality,
mm-hmm.
but he had already, just based on your descriptions, if I say so myself, he has qualities similar to me. Because, see, that's where I, again, raise controversy with women, because I have been the type of guy that will say, call up a woman and say, hey, I want you to come over and suck my dick. And then within 15 minutes, how do you suck my dick? I want you to leave. I tell them that even before they get here. And the thing is, a lot of women will do that shit. And so I am known for being very on the verbal end. Using your term, I push the edge to the highest degree. Now, the one thing I'm not down with, referencing Ken Hoinsky again, like I saw one thing in the trailer where a guy knocks a woman off a stage or something. I'm not about anything that's too physically on edge. And that's where I do tend to be real cautious. Like a lot of guys will ask me, Alan, do you believe I should go up to a woman and say, just grab her ass? I'm like, oh, hell no.
No.
Don't do that shit until a woman gives you either a verbal green light or something about her body language lets you know that. But verbally, I've said some shit that guys would be like, God damn, Alan, what the fuck? That's how my first book came about. Well, I don't want to get too much of my shit, but anyway, my first book, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's called Mo One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking.
Mm.
And to give you the real quick backstory, how that came about is that I noticed when I was in college, most guys, when they wanted casual sex from a woman, they wouldn't be straightforward about that. They would basically pretend like they wanted, you know, a long-term monogamous boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, and then after they fucked a woman X number of days, X number of weeks, or a month or two, they would just dump her. And so a lot of women I knew would come to me like, Alan, why do guys make you feel like they care for you and then after you have sex with them a few times, you just don't hear from them again? I said, oh, that's simple. They just wanted casual sex. And the women would say, well, why don't they just say that? So I actually began to empathize with them, and I went back to some of my frat brothers and close friends and was like, hey, man, let me ask you a question. When you approach women and you know from the get-go you just want casual sex, are you straightforward about that? And like 95 to 99% of guys are like, oh, hell no, man. You can't be honest with women about the fact that you just want to fuck them. They're either going to curse you out or slap you or whatever. I was like, that's bullshit. Anyway, long story short, they challenged me to go to a party and just be ultra straightforward. I had the most favorable reactions I've ever had. And you can say the rest is history. Now, coming back to your film, it's interesting because you've had characters. Like, I was reading an interview a while back where Al Pacino said, what was interesting, a lot of gangsters and thugs love Scarface.
Right.
And
right.
He said he meant for that character to kind of be this cautionary tale. But, shoot, I know brothers love, they want to emulate Scarface. Every aspect of his personality. Denzel Washington dealt with that, he said, with his character in Training Day. And I think the most recent controversy that was similar was The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Leo said he wanted Jordan Belfort's character to be a character you would say, no, I don't want to be with it like him. But he said almost all the guys on Wall Street are like, man, I want to be just like that motherfucker. He got a lot of pussy. He made a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, you raise a good point. I mean, there are qualities that you're like, wow, I could look up to this guy. This guy has it. But at the end of the day, you know, again, not to sound cliche, but, you know, does he feel fulfilled in his life, you know? And just to make it clear to the audience and all of that, I'm nowhere near have the ideologies of this character or anything like that. I mean, it's funny because you know, some people have asked, oh, Mike, are you a misogynist? Or, you know, this is edgy. Like, do you really treat women like this and all that? And for friends and people and even exes, they know, no, of course not. I mean, I'd like to think that I'm pretty respectful. I am not, like, this crazy lady killer or anything like that. So, That being said, I mean, we've all had our wild days and everything, but, you know, it's just one of those things. But, yeah, I mean, Trevor's character, some people are going to like him. Some people will like him, you know. Even though they know on paper it's maybe wrong, they're going to be like, damn, dude, that guy has something about him. So, yeah.
I want to tell my listeners, originally this show was planned for 2 hours, but I can already tell you it's going to go at least 2.5. I got a little bit of a late start, and it's going to go longer, so listeners, plan on, you know, I've had shows as long as actually 3.5 hours. But, yeah, this is going to go at least 2.5 hours because I still have 2 more people to interview after Michael, but I got still a few more questions. Mike, okay, now getting to the big question, what is your, if it's in any way different from, say, the dictionary's definition, what is your definition? What is Michael Matteo Rossi's definition of a misogynist?
I think that a misogynist is somebody who does not hold women in a very high regard, somebody that feels like, you know, yeah, I mean, they can dislike him, but that they also want, if, you know, they want to use them, they feel like they're lower. They feel like they are easy to take hold of, and that, you know, they're to serve men or to serve some sort of other thing, that they're either weaker or more feeble or something like that. So that's kind of my view without trying to, you know, give a complete dictionary type definition. That's kind of how I see it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna preface my words by saying I respect your difference of opinion, but I have to say I disagree with parts of your definition. But, again, that's your definition. I asked you for your definition, so I'm respecting yours different. But here's why I would say why I feel different. I always tell people that I think there's a difference between being sexist, chauvinistic, and misogynistic. And a lot of people tend to kind of use those interchangeably, but I look at them distinctively different. And at least a few of those characteristics in your description of misogynist, I look at more so as a chauvinist, which I look at distinct. Here would be my definition. A sexist is someone who just always favors their own gender. Like if they were an employer and they interviewed one male candidate and one female candidate, they're going to automatically pick the male. If they were apartment landlord and they had only one apartment left and a male came in and applied, a female, they're going to give it to the male. That's a sexist, at least by definition. Chauvinist would be a lot of what you said, is a man who kind of looks at women as not being as capable as them or as competent as them. And tends to like to belittle them and say stuff like, oh, you know, men are smarter than women, men make better decisions than women, and those type of comments. And then, again, for me, a misogynist is just a guy who just, like, hates women. I mean, he just has a passionate hatred for them. Now, have you heard, even though the movie hasn't been released, so I'm sure you haven't gotten that much feedback, but from those who have seen it, have you gotten any particular feedback, say, from a professional dating coach or a pickup artist, somebody in what's known as the attraction and seduction community?
That's a good question. You know, I haven't kind of overtly, but it has been seen by, you know, some close friends, colleagues, even people who worked on it that I know are good with women, that I know are, you know, have that. I wouldn't say that maybe they're a professional. But, yeah, I mean, it's been seen. But so far, it's gotten really good feedback, you know, from people who also don't sugarcoat. I mean, it's gotten a lot of – keep in mind, I mean, there's a story to it. There is a story. There are well-drawn-out characters, and it's not just a sensationalist type thing where it shows, you know, misogynists dominating women, misogynists treating them like trash. Like, there is a story. There is a kind of reason behind, you know, things. There's a backstory. So it's thankfully been pretty favorable. I mean, I'll say this with complete conviction. It's my best work. It's by far the best thing that I've ever done, which is interesting. I never thought, you know, if you'd asked me 5-10 years ago, Misogynist is my best film. But no, I mean, it's what I'm known for the most already. There have been tons of articles about it already. I know that there's going to be a whole hell of a lot more when it gets wide release. So it's going to draw some attention. Some people will get offended. It's not a family fun film. You don't bust out the popcorn and, you know, bring the kids over. I mean, it's going to be rated R. It's definitely edgy. It's disturbing. But there's a whole hell of a lot of films like that that are damn good. So.
Oh, yeah. I just saw one. Well, I mentioned Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, a lot of people said it had too much nudity and what they called pornographic moments. But shit, I mean, Leo won a Golden Globe for that. I mean, it was a good movie, but it had a lot of fucking. Now, speaking of fucking, I got to ask you, you know, I know you're all about artistic and, you know, telling the story, but I'm going to just keep it real. Is there at least 2 or 3 scenes that the average guy would say, leave the theater saying, damn, man, that one scene, that got my dick hard?
Well, I will tell you, there are a lot of good-looking women in the film, and they can act. So there are a few scenes. I mean, it is sexually graphic and some things. But, yeah, I mean, there's some disturbing scenes. I mean, it's something it's hard to say without giving too much away. But there's some scenes where it's like, damn, this might be kind of weirdly hot. But, I mean, I'll put it this way. There's a lot of sexual scenes in the film, yes.
Well, you know, what's interesting, you say, I've heard you mention this a couple of times, that you said the actresses said there were some behavior that was almost simultaneously disturbing but hot. I had an interview, matter of fact, to this date, this my most listened to episode over the last 6.5 years was just this past spring. I interviewed this guy named Daniel Bergner, who had this New York Times bestselling book called What Do Women Want? And we had the most interesting discussion. But anyway, what he did in the book, what he chronicles is, he didn't as much do research himself as much as he hung around like sex therapists and similar people in similar fields, and they were doing different experiments. And one of them, what is this experiment called? The Wet-O-Meter. And this was interesting. I brought it up on a few later shows, including this one. They had this exercise where they showed women, like, really nice, gentlemanly type guys, whether it be just photographs or videos of them. And what they did was they attached some device to the women's pussies and to see if whatever they were looking at, listening to, was going to have a reaction and cause them to get aroused. Here's, without getting too academic, too detailed, in a nutshell, all the photographic and videographic images that made the women say, "Oh, that guy is so sweet. He's such a nice guy." Their pussy was as dry as the Sahara Desert. But on the photos and videos where it was kind of a guy who was maybe thuggish, rough around the edges, super edgy, etc., the women verbally would say, "Oh, that guy's an asshole. That guy's a jerk. I would never date him." But the pussy-o-meter was like, beep. Beep, 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 beep. Basically, their pussy was getting wet on the guys they were criticizing.
That it's interesting that, you know what, like, you know, no girl wants a complete nice guy. No girl wants a complete asshole. But at the same time, nice guys get boring. And you got to keep that edge. I mean, with me personally, you know, not to delve too personally into me, but you know, I need a challenge. If a girl comes on way, way, way too easy to me, I mean, yeah, she can be hot and that's great, but if it really want to draw my attention, give me a little bit of a challenge. You know, show me that, you know, kind of play. I hate games, but I hate to say you play the game a little bit, little flirting back and forth. You know, show me that you're not completely easy, and that will get me very interested, you know? But that's just me. Of course, varies.
Interesting, interesting. Well, of course, I feel a little different because, shit, I'll take easy. Shit.
Okay.
If I want to fuck a woman, I want her to give me pussy as easily. Now, I like challenges. I feel you on that. But
I
can't say for me that that's a requirement. That here's what I always say, and people laugh, of course. I say, I want a woman, for me, Alan Roger Curry, I want her to be easy. I just don't want her to be easy with everybody else.
That's
as simple as that.
Yeah. but you're right. But I'm talking in terms of if I want to be dating a girl or being serious with a girl and all of that. You know, I want to keep my interest high and consistent. You know, yeah, if someone's going for a one-night stand, of course you're going to want somebody easy or someone that just completely wants to get into bed. But if you want that relationship, you know, keep it interesting. Keep my attention going.
So. Oh, well, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah, you always want a woman. Matter of fact,
you don't
want to
get bored. No?
Huh?
I'm saying, like, yeah, you don't want to get bored, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. I'm going to make this point, and then I'm going to go to intermission. But
sure.
When I did a speaking engagement in Vegas, I brought this up a couple times on my show, but there was this guy from Chicago named James Amaral. Matter of fact, he would probably be interested in seeing him, because he's this guy. He's funny. He graduated from University of Chicago, super intelligent and articulate, and he has this book about kinky sex. He's all into that whole BDSM world where, you know, you tie women up with ropes and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, but we were talking about this whole notion, because a lot of women will always say, well, Alan, before I let you fuck me, I want you to get to know me. I want to get to know you. And I was telling him, I said, that's bullshit. I said, no man needs to get to know a woman in order. We don't even have to know a woman's name to fuck her. And he started laughing. He said, that's true. He said, see, the thing that women don't understand about men, he said, we want to get to know a woman for those moments when we're not going to be fucking. Because he said, we don't want to spend time in the non-sexual periods of times either being bored by a woman or being irritated by a woman. And I said, damn, that's a bingo. I totally agree with that. Because no one wants to either be bored or irritated.
Right.
You said what?
Right. No, you're right. And that's it's interesting. I mean, because obviously, you know, you can't be screwing 24/7. You know, if you want to engage in dating a girl, you obviously have to have some common interests, get along with the person. I mean, it's at the core of it. So, yeah.
Exactly. Listeners, if you have a question for my guest, Michael, or just a comment about the conversation thus far, you can call in to 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. Right now, I'm going to take an intermission break, but when I get back, I'm going to introduce one of the two female cast members that I have on deck tonight. And what else before I go to this intermission break? So, yeah. Oh, and Michael, I'm going to be interviewing these women, but I'm going to, if he chooses to, I'm going to keep him on deck, too, in case I want to ask him a question related to some of the questions I asked the women. But anyway, I will be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere.
Mode One.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex appeal.
This is Nikki True, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Nikki Ransom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
What's going on, fellas?
Thanks for tuning in. It's nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And, I like women.
Hey, everybody! Hey, everybody!
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips. It's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff because it's awesome. And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls.
If you're in London, this is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from. Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister name.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, I will see you. Mm.
You will?
Soon. Ryan.
Ryan. Me too.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chap girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. I just want a little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the boot camp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha at sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and
stop being a fucking... come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lines, and or sex lines. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with filmmaker Michael Matteo Rossi, the writer and director of the upcoming film Misogynist, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. And if you're just tuning in tonight, what we're discussing is a movie that's not out yet, but more, boy, oh boy, is it going to hit the ground running. It's a movie entitled Misogynist. Now, you know that's a controversial word, particularly in the area of dating and relationships. And if you didn't hear my intro, I was saying that misogynist is a word that a lot of people, in my strong opinion, use it inappropriately and invalidly. But if you're not familiar with the term, a misogynist, plain and simply, is someone who has a passionate hatred, passionate disrespect for women. They just don't like women. I would say on one extreme, they hate women to the point where they literally want them dead. So any guy that's a serial killer of women would be a misogynist. He hates women. Now, if you read my article, I forgot to mention, I had this article that's been getting a lot of controversial reactions about the 80-20 rule. If you haven't read it, please go on you'll see it on my Twitter, on my Facebook page. It's about what's called the 80-20 rule. Now, this is a rule that's never been confirmed. It's more so been maintained as a theory. But there's a theory that if you put 1,000 single women on an island and 1,000 single men on an island, roughly 80% of the women will gravitate towards the top 20% of the most desirable men. And again, this has never been like scientifically proven, but it's been a long-standing, if nothing else, a long-standing theory. And I wrote an article about it. And it kind of relates to tonight's discussion because I said there's always going to be a group of guys in society that once they realize they're not getting any pussy, but there's another guy across town that's not only getting some pussy, but he has the opportunity to fuck like 5 to 10 different women at any given point in time. Over a period of time, that man's going to develop a lot of hatred. He's going to be like, why the fuck am I a loser? And some guys who feel like they're losers are going to just seek to improve themselves, which is what they should do. But there's going to be another group that's going to say, I hate that motherfucker who's getting all that pussy to the point where I want to kill him and the women who are not giving me any pussy. And that's what leads to a lot of men. I talk about this in my books. That's what leads to a lot of men becoming a misogynist, if nothing else, is not getting enough pussy. There is a similar word that you notice you don't hear too much about that applies to people who hate men, and that's a misandrist. A misandrist is similar to misogynist. When you have a passionate hatred for men to the point where you want to kill men or not associate with men, that means you are a misandrist. But you notice you don't hear that word plugged as much as misogynist. But what I'm going to do right now is introduce my second guest, who was born and raised in Boston. You might have seen her on the I, Legion, episode of Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles on Fox. She just had a movie released, I want to say it's called The Blackwater Vampire, something. I'll let her say it. Something to do with Blackwater and vampires that just came out just a few days ago. Amber Crombie and Fitch ran an article about her when she was 15 years old.
Backstage West ran an article about her in 2010. I'm assuming if she got articles written about her when she was 15, she's some type of prodigy. So I'm going to find that out in my question. She loves, when she's not working, she loves to attend thrift shops, flea markets in different states. I've read on the internet she loves to travel. She loves to travel. And she got a nomination as Best Actress for Garden of Eden at the Terror Film Festival in Philadelphia. So listeners, on behalf of Blog Talk Radio and Upfront and Straightforward, give it up for Miss Danielle Lozal.
Hi.
How are you doing, Danielle?
Good. How are you?
So what made you so special that they said, we want to write an article about Danielle at... Wait, let me rewind a second. Did I pronounce your last name right?
It's Lozo.
Say that one more time.
Lozo.
Lozell. Okay.
It's like Bozo, but called Lozo.
I just call you Danielle. So what made you get this type of attention at the age of 15 years old?
I actually did a soap opera called Seasons, and they got wind of it because it was for Abercrombie Kids, and they were said that I had the A-life. So they ran an article about me and the filming of the soap opera and stuff.
Oh, okay. you just sound so cute and perky. Now, how long in general have you been pursuing a career in the entertainment industry?
11 years.
Mm-hmm.
But more within the past 3 years, more consistently and more structurally, I guess.
Okay. So I heard you love to travel, and you typically take your cat along with you.
Yes.
You cannot be separated from your cat.
Where did you read that?
I got my CIA people working for me.
Yeah, I do. I have my cat is a service animal, and she helps people with anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder. So she's been trained. So she travels with me everywhere.
Okay. Give me 5 spots. Or up to 5 spots that you just adore. Like, you're like, man, I've been to a lot of places, but these 3 to 5 spots are the spots I most love to travel to.
I used to live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I love Albuquerque. I love Texas. I saw my first tornado in Corsicana, Texas, which was pretty awesome. I lived in New York, so I love Brooklyn. It's a little urban.
Oh, I love Brooklyn, too.
Yeah. My grandfather lives in Florida, so I love, he lives near Orlando, so that's really nice and tropical. And then, of course, I love my hometown of Boston.
Boston. So did you cry when the Patriots lost?
No, but I think my dad did. I was a really bad. I know. Oh, don't worry. He listens to these and he laughs at these interviews. He thinks they're funny. But no, he was kind of bummed. He was kind of pissed about it. But I'm pretty sure he was screaming, and my mom wasn't home, so I'm pretty sure he was saying like, "Oh, get your head out of your ass." So, but I didn't get to hear any of that, sadly.
Okay. All right. Now tell me what. Well, 2 things. First, what attracted you to the role of April? And without giving too many details that would lead to a spoiler, I want you to briefly describe April's role in relation to the lead characters. Now, just from what I know, from what I've read, from what I've seen, you're like kind of the little innocent, wholesome, naive, good girl in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Like, yeah.
April... Oh, it's I play these roles a lot. April is this young, naive wife-to-be of Harrison, who is played by Jonathan Bennett. So she's a virgin. She's abstinent. She's not having sex until marriage. And she kind of doesn't really realize what Harrison is doing. She doesn't know. It's kept a secret. And her world is tossed upside down when you get later on in the movie and you find out more of who Harrison is and how Harrison is involved. And I saw the casting call, and it really kind of, I love gritty films. I love gritty independent drama movies. And when I read the description of the character and the situations that she would be in, I kind of was like, this is a role I want. This is something that I want to do. And it just kind of fell into place after, like, we had two auditions, and I got the part, and it was amazing because I was able to have a really great emotional range. I was really, really apt to just break her down and build her back up, which I think is really cool with the character. And the story was so gritty, and I love to cause controversy with movies, so it kind of was hand-in-hand a winner.
Do you now? You love to cause controversy, huh?
I do. Well, my favorite movie is Teeth with Jess Wexler. It's about the girl that has vagina dysplasia. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I remember hearing about that movie. I've never seen it,
yeah.
But I heard about it.
It won the Best Jury Grand Prize at Sundance, I think, in 2008. It's my ultimate favorite movie, and when I meet someone, I'm like, you have to watch this movie, and I think they're petrified of me after we watch this movie because they don't know where to take it.
They're like, damn, why does she love that movie?
I know.
Let's talk to her gynecologist. Oh, man, that's too funny. Oh, huh. So how was it working with Tracy Bregman of Young and the Restless fame?
She's great. She's beautiful. I want to look like that when I get older. Can that happen?
Yeah, it can happen. Take care of yourself.
I might not age that well. I'm kind of scared. No, she's great to work with. I might not age that well. I don't know. I don't know if I would look as beautiful. She's really pretty.
It depends. I mean, like, it's funny. When I think of people I went to high school and college with, yeah, that's the thing. When you get older, you know, because when you're young, everybody kind of looks the same in terms of, I don't know, the condition of their skin and just their general age process. But once you start getting into 30s, 40s, 50s, you see that some people have aged well, some people not so much. And, I think it all comes down to the old cliche things, you know, you eat right, you take care of yourself. So, I'm learning a little bit more about you, Danielle, because, see, I had you all wrong. If you're watching movies like what you describe, I'm thinking you just watch Disney movies all day and then turn on Nickelodeon.
Oh, I do. I do watch Fantasia every day. I'm kidding.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, Miss Danielle, what is your definition? What is Danielle's description and definition of a misogynist?
You know, my first initial thing about a misogynist was a chauvinistic pig. That was my first initial reaction. But after reading the script, I kind of had a whole new light because I personally kind of pity Trevor. Like, I feel bad for him that he can't, just, I don't know, be normal and, like, be happy.
He can't be normal.
You know, or just find happiness. He's just kind of, like, sad, and I feel bad for him.
Let me delve into that. What do you define? I'm going to ask you kind of a twofold question. What do you, as Danielle, kind of look at as quote-unquote normal behavior, and what do you surmise that April looks at as quote-unquote normal behavior?
Well, on my side, I don't let a guy run my life. I'm very independent. I've lived on my own since I was 18, and I'm just kind of men are not my source of happiness, and I don't seek men out for, like, for whatever reason. So I don't know, but April is very dependent on Harrison. But then again, she doesn't know what he is, so she can't really, like, I guess she can't really base an opinion until, I don't want to give anything away. It's just horrible, because I don't know what I can say and what I can't say.
Well, I mean, I think you can talk. I've had people on my show before that talked about a movie without, per se, giving away a significant plot point. I mean, you could talk about some of the, like, the just general characteristics of your character versus another character. I don't think that would give away
she's
the movie.
Very, April's very different from me. Cause she's
okay,
very
give me two to three ways she's totally
yeah.
different from you.
Yeah, she's different in the fact that she depends on Harrison for her, like, source of happiness.
Okay.
Because this is what she wants. She wants to get married. She wants to start a family. Like, this is her idealistic view of what life is. And my life, I'm so career focused that I've been swearing out relationships since my last one ended in 2010. I've dated, yes, but I'm so focused that I don't have the time to depend on anybody, or I feel like, I don't know, I'm kind of a horrible person to date. So April's so different. I mean, I feel like I know what you've gone through, though, in, like, past relationships when you feel like your heart is broken. Like, I definitely have that. And we're,
so have you ever known a woman, since she's not representative of you, have you had, like, maybe a relative, close friend, classmate, who you could say, man, she's just like April?
Oh, yeah. I mean, tons of women. So many women I know that either feel the need to attach to a man, even though he treats her like crap. And it's just like, why do you keep going, oh, my CDs are still in this car, you know? I'm like, my CDs are still in this car. And I'm like, just leave. Just get out of the relationship if you're not happy. But I know so many women that are so attached to men that they get so heartbroken when it turns out to not be what they expected. So I see their lives fall apart, and I just watch from the back of a fence like, oh, that sucks.
Well, I know why. You know, women and men have asked me, they'll say, like a lot of guys I work with who are my clients, they'll say, Alan, why do women stay with the guys who, like, you know, assholes and jerks? And you were mentioning how some of the women you know stay with guys. There's a simple reason. Well, I'm going to ask you a question first, and then I'm gonna give you my feedback. Let me ask you this. If you had the opportunity to be part of a man's, for lack of a better term, mini harem, and that guy was cocky, selfish, kind of a semi-asshole, but he was exceptionally good in bed, or being the number one woman to a guy who's very nice and sweet and considerate, but he was less than average in bed with no signs of improvement in the near future, who would you choose? Which situation would you choose?
Well, I've dated both of those, and the bad guy, it didn't work out. And the good guy, he was just
too
worried.
It didn't work out either, did it?
No, it didn't. I mean, neither of them worked out, and I've dated both of those types of people because I went from the bad guy that, you know, could care less, I'm so handsome, and then I've gone to, like, the really nice guy who is, you know, just very average, but super sweet and super funny, but it just didn't work out. So, I mean, I don't know. But the bad guy is more appealing. I mean, for any woman, a bad guy is so much more appealing because it's more dangerous looking and it's far more attractive. And the nice guy, you're just like, oh, this guy thinks I'm so perfect all the time. That's so not true.
Here's my brief theory on it, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I have found, it relates to years ago, I was at this comedy performance, and this woman actually said it. She was a female comedian, and she said, she was cracking these jokes, and she said, right now, I just want to talk to the man. So, ladies, you can go and get, you know, some popcorn or whatever. Fellas, I'm going to talk to you. She said, have you ever known a woman, And she's with this guy that you perceive as just the biggest jerk and ass in the world, but she just won't leave him. Of course, for you, the guys are always like, yeah. She's like, you want to know why that is? And, of course, they were like, yeah. She said, because that motherfucker got some good-ass dick. And everybody just fell out laughing. But I got to be honest. I'm just speaking from my experiences. That is the truth. Because here's the deal. If a guy is a jerk, and on top of being a jerk, he sucks in bed, ain't no woman staying with him. Ain't no woman staying with him. He is dumped in a matter of a few days or a couple of weeks. But when a guy is to one degree or another a jerk, but he knows how to make a woman come and come and come, that woman is going to have this, what I call an internal conflict. One little voice on her right shoulder is going to say, you need to leave that guy. He doesn't treat you right. He doesn't give you enough attention. Then you're going to have that voice on the left shoulder and be like, girl, he makes you come all the time, though. So that's how I look at the whole nice guy versus a jerk, is that, because to me, no guy who knows he has a great reputation for his sexual prowess is going to be inclined to exhibit that whole nice, sweet type behavior. Was there anything about April? Well, I guess other than the fact that April was different from you, that would be a little bit challenging. But other than that, was there anything in this role, like I say, a particular scene that you were like, wow, this, I have to really like prepare for this scene and really get in character because this is going to be a challenge, or not necessarily?
Well, I'm kind of a different actor. I don't necessarily do any type of method preparing for scene. There is a very, very intense scene in the movie that is between me and Harrison. And okay. I didn't necessarily have to prepare for it. I basically just kind of learned my lines, show up on set, and kind of just feel the environment and then go from there. So, I mean, everything, all the cards just kind of put into place, and as we're going, me and Jonathan Bennett just connected really well, and everything just kind of fell out. Like, I think I cried an entire river that night for two nights. So, I mean, it's not so much preparing, it's kind of being in the moment and kind of embracing it as you're going through it, that she was kind of going through what she was dealing with. So mm-hmm. I was taking on that pain and delivering it outwards. So there wasn't much preparing, though. I mean, besides memorizing the lines, that's about mm-hmm. it.
Okay. Now, Michael had mentioned there was at least a handful of scenes that on one end were, as he put it, disturbing, but yet some of the actresses were like, well, wow, that was hot. Did you feel a couple of those scenes? Was there a scene where you were like, damn, I want to hate that guy for doing that or saying that, but damn, that kind of left me a little moist?
I didn't have any scenes like that. My character doesn't deal with any of that type of stuff. But watching one of the scenes in the movie that deals with the main misogynist, Trevor, played by John Berdow, and Cheryl, it's a very steamy scene, but, I mean, it's so hard. I watch movies. I feel like I'm so numb to movies now. But, I mean, it was a very like, sexy, attractive, disturbing scene at the same time. So it was a good part in the movie. I'm pretty sure you'd enjoy it.
Oh, you're pretty sure I would enjoy it. Okay. See, you don't know me, Danielle, because...
Oh, but it's a good scene. You got to see it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take your word on it, but I will quickly say... One interesting relationship, I have a lot of female friends. A lot of my female friends will send porno clips to me to evaluate them because they know I'm so selective on them. Because a lot of porn, if you put it in front of a guy, most guys, they like any form of porn as long as it's naked bodies and sex going on. Whereas I'm very critical of like most porn. I'm like, man, that ain't arouse me. That don't turn me on. Because I'm more into the seduction. So, like, for this movie, a scene that would grab me is not so much, per se, the actual sex scene, but whatever led up to the sex. Like, the seduction. I'm a seduction. seduction freak. I like hot, intense seduction. So that's the type of scene that would really grab me. But I'm very anxious to see the movie because I'm really curious because I want to see how much I'm going to, what percentage of me is going to empathize with Trevor and what part of me is going to have disdain for him, because I think you've heard the early part of the interview. See, I'm similar to Trevor, number one, in respect that I'm a dating coach. I basically teach men how to approach women with more confidence, how to create romantic and or sexual chemistry with a woman by usually no later than the end of the first conversation. And so based on a few of the things that Michael told me about Trevor, I was like, man, at least half of me is going to like this guy. Now, when I heard the term sociopath associated with him, that's when I had to, like, separate. I was like, no, I've never had anybody put that label on me, and hopefully I never will. But a lot of stuff I teach is very edgy, which leads me to this question. Let's say you already told me you're pretty career-focused, you're not even really into dating, but let's say you were kind of open to connect with guys. And let's say you were in a nightclub, and there was kind of two groups of guys. One group that's looking for their next long-term girlfriend, another guy that's just looking to get laid. For that latter group, who's just looking for a short-term, non-monogamous companion for a few days, a few weeks, or a month or two of casual sex, how would you want that guy to approach you and initiate a conversation with you and carry on a conversation with you?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't involve myself with someone that just wants casual one-night stand.
I mean, but how would you know until he told you, though?
You get vibes from people. I mean, I don't know.
So you're saying you would be able, before he even opened his mouth, you would be able to tell that that was his objective?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, yeah. I mean, I don't go to nightclubs. I think the last nightclub I went to when I was like 17.
Okay, well, let's take you out of it. Let's pretend you got a girlfriend named Tanya. And she goes to nightclubs 2 to 3 times a month. And I don't know, just one night out of the blue, she had you invite her. She invited you to join her. And you were just kind of playing the buddy role. Man, most of men were approaching her. Now, switching to her, how would you want men to approach her to let her know what their objectives are?
I mean, respectfully approach her, and just, I guess, be flat out honest, because, I mean, the worst part is finding out that you like the guy and it's not going to ever work out. So, I mean, as a best friend, I would want them to be honest to her and let them know what they're looking for and what they want. So.
But you see, one of the reasons I'm asking this question actually is because of something you just said. See, here's the problem I have with a lot of women, and a lot of women are cool with my approach, the ones who know about my approach, but I have those who are critics of it, and some of them actually label me a misogynist. But here's where I have one of my pet peeves with a number of women. A number of women will say on one hand, like you just did, they'll say, I don't want men who are going to lie to me, and I don't want men to play games with me, which I totally agree with both of those. But then if I say, okay, yeah, I told one of my clients to approach a woman and within a matter of minutes let that woman know straightforwardly that he wants to fuck her. Oh, I think that's disrespectful to start talking about sex that quick and expressing a desire for sex. That's just not respectful. And my question is, what is this? Well, first let me ask you, what's your definition of respectful behavior versus disrespectful behavior, and particularly as it relates to expressing sexual desires and interests?
Oh, that's a deep question.
That's what I'm known for on my show. Deep
questions.
Yeah,
I guess you are. It's so hard. I feel like I'm the worst person to ask because, I mean, my definition of respect is it from a guy is, you know, I don't want to be lied to. I've been lied to in the past, so it's something that I seek out right away.
Okay, so we got that clear. You don't want a man lying to you. So let's say a man came up to you. Okay, go ahead.
I'm from Boston, so I'm pretty brash. I tell people how it is and what I want and what I don't want, and people get kind of offended by it. So I in turn want the person to be just as brash with me, because I can.
So you
would
be cool with a guy telling you, "Hey Danielle, you know what? I think you're attractive. I think you're sexy. I think we should go back to my place and exchange orgasms all night long." You wouldn't have a problem with that approach, right?
Yeah, because then I'd shut him down.
Then you just have the opportunity to reject him, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Then I don't have a problem with you. Here's my thing. I don't want to get too much of my stuff because, you know, well, you can only talk about so much without giving away spoilers. But I basically, in my books, divide women into four categories, what I refer to as reciprocators, rejectors, pretenders, and time wasters. I need to just, the first two, you can probably surmise what those are about. Reciprocator would be like a woman, I approach her and say, "Hey, you know, I think you're attractive, I think you're sexy, I want to fuck you." She says, "Shoot, I want to fuck you too." And then we go about our business. Rejector would be what you just described. I approach you, let you know I wanted to have sex with you, and you say, "No, I'm not down for any type of casual sex and anything like that." I would respect that. A pretender, I would call those first two what I call the straightforward, non-manipulative type women, which I love them both. I respect them both. I like people who are straightforward. The two trickier types of women that I teach men to deal with is what's called the pretender and the time waster. A pretender would be if I approached you, told you I wanted to, in one way or another, I wanted to have sex with you, and you initially, keyword being, initially act like you were turned off by that you frowned on the idea of us having sex, and particularly casual sex, but then as the minutes go by or the hours go by, you slowly but surely reveal that was really just your, what I call your prudish facade. You really want to get down. And I teach men how to identify those types. And then the final type is what I call the time waster, who is almost just the opposite of a pretender. That's a woman that if I approach you and let you know I want to have sex, you're going to initially act like you are interested just to keep me in conversation, but really you just want me to have a conversation that's flattering, entertaining, where I might offer to wine and dine you, buy you free drinks. And once you've used me for flattery, entertainment, and free drinks and free meals, you're like, okay, take care. And so, yeah, that's the only two types. I'm to one degree critical of, particularly the time wasters. I'm very critical of the women who are time wasters. But rejectors, again, I respect that. And how I think that relates to the film and the premise of the film is that when I talk about a lot of my seduction methods as far as helping men identify pretenders and time wasters, women say, "Oh, I just think overall you should, in the first conversation, you should talk about, you know, what's your favorite movie and what you like to eat." And I'm like, that's bullshit. You don't learn anything about anybody by talking about favorite movies and food and all that type of stuff. So let me ask you this. Have you ever called someone, a male you know, whether it be an ex-boyfriend, a boyfriend of a girlfriend of yours, have you ever labeled them a misogynist and they got really upset about it? They were like, "I am not a misogynist. I just do things differently." Have you ever had that type of situation happen?
No, I haven't. I've had really judgmental friends that I've called out on for just stupid things that come out of their mouths, but I've never met anybody that I've ever labeled a misogynist.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Okay, final question. What do you think is going to be, based on how you know your female friends and acquaintances to be and how you know your male friends and acquaintances to be, What kind of reactions do you think you're going to get from both who see the movie, and in what ways do you predict that their reactions will be different from one another?
Well, I do know my dad would be shocked. He hasn't seen it yet, but he will probably soon. But my mom watched it, as well as my best friend, and they loved it. They thought it was very character-driven, and it was very gritty and good. But I don't know. I'm hoping that my friends still, like, again, the movies that I do aren't necessarily very pop and sugar. So I'm hoping that a lot of my friends and, you know, future colleagues feel the same way that I do about it, that they love it because they love the controversy. It's different. It's something that hasn't been done, and it's gritty enough where it's honest and real. So I hope people have a pretty good positive outlook on it that I do. When I read it, I was very intrigued by it, and it's something that doesn't come around your lap very often when you're in L.A. So I hope people have a pretty good, you know, look onto it. But I know a lot of people have been like, oh, God, he's a misogynist. I can't believe, like, that's kind of shitty of him. But I'm like, but you have to see the movie to understand where it stems from.
That was good feedback. Well, I thank you for joining me, Danielle. I wish you nothing but continued success. And but my only little piece of advice to you would be, I know you seem like you ultra laser focused on your career goals, but I believe in working hard and playing hard, and don't just totally shut out, you know, your personal life, your dating life. You can diminish it, but don't eliminate it. But I mean, you know, you got to do what you're gonna do.
Trying, but, you know, sometimes it's just difficult. Well, I mean, I worked sometimes 12 hours on a set for a month or two, so it's very hard sometimes to carry on a relationship with people because, one, they don't understand if you're kissing someone else or when you're coming home or when you're going to be able to call because you're 3 hours either behind or forward. So, I mean, it's just, I'll try it at some point, and hopefully it'll work out, but until then, I'm going to continue what I'm doing, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, oh, I got one favorite. I don't know if you've listened to past episodes of my show, but if you have, you know what a favorite I'm about to ask before I let you go. You know do you know the title of my first book?
No, I don't.
You don't? Shame on you. It's called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. And usually when I have guests on the show, and particularly female guests, I'll have them either in their most enthusiastic manner or their most seductive manner stretch out the O's, and they say, Mode 1. So let me get your best. Mode 1.
Okay, so it's mold, like mold on food?
No. M-O-D-E.
Oh, mode. M-O, mode. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I thought you said mold. I was like, mold, like, okay, got it.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Mode 1.
Mode 1. Alan Roger Curry.
Mode 1. From upfront to straightforward.
Mode 1. Alan Roger Curry.
Listeners, two things. If you want to call in with a question or comment, you can call in with 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. Secondly, probably 80 to 90% of my shows usually, you know, conclude at the two-hour mark. But every now and then, about maybe 15 to 20% of the time, I do a show that's 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and a half, even. I've gone as long as 3.5 hours. But I'm going to be going longer, so you can say this is an extended episode, extended version. Like in the old days of you buy the record and they say it's the extended disco version. Because I'm going to be interviewing another female cast member, and I got a bunch of raw, provocative questions for her, and we're going to talk about her role in the film, some of her thoughts on today's dating scene, and just a lot of different things. So Stay with me. I'm going to take an intermission break, and then I'm going to come back and introduce her. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Are you a single heterosexual male who has experienced more than your share of problems, disappointments, and frustrations in your interactions with women of interest? Then you need to contact Linda Gross. She's the author of The Caveman Formula, How to Master Winning Ways with Women. She will offer you consultation sessions that will seek to identify and eliminate all the flaws and weaknesses in your behavior. Contact Linda today at info@themensadvocate.com. That's info@themensadvocate.com. Mention Mode 1 and you'll get 15 minutes free in your consultation session. Don't hesitate. Contact her today.
I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I need love and affection. And I hope I'm not sounding too desperate. I need love and affection.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really?
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So the listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me.
I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with filmmaker Michael Mateo Rossi, the writer and director of the upcoming film Misogynist, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. If you're just tuning in, what we're talking about is an upcoming movie entitled Misogynist. The movie was written and directed by a young man named Michael Mateo Rossi, and I interviewed him during the first hour and 15 minutes to hour and a half, about the first hour and a half of the show. And I asked him a lot of questions related to how he came about the movie. If you just tuned in and you missed it, you can hear that on the archive podcast version that's available on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. That's actually where probably 85 to 90% of my listeners come from, is the podcast listeners. I mean, only about 10 to 15% of my listeners are the live listeners, and I appreciate you. That's why I always give you extra love. I love my live listeners, but actually, yeah, if I get, 50,000 listens, probably 45,000 of those are the archive podcast listens. But I talked to him for the first hour and a half, and then for about the last half hour, I spoke with a woman named Danielle Lozelle. She plays the kind of innocent, wholesome, naive April. And now the woman I'm about to introduce, I got to tell you, fellas, you know me, I'm pretty stingy on flattery, but she just got that oomph, you know what I'm saying? That oomph, that if you just see some of her acting roles, some of her pictures, you're going to rise to the occasion. Trust me, depending on what picture it is, depending on what excerpt, you're going to rise to the occasion, because she just has a lot of fucking sex appeal. I can see why she was chosen. She was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and that's where she spent most of her years. And yeah, she, Atlanta, Georgia, I got a lot of relatives. And now she, it's interesting, she said school wasn't her thing. You don't find too many people who were, honest about that, but she was like, she didn't really like school. She wanted to just go out and do some shit. She did like acting school, though. That's where she honed her craft. She learned her craft, and she's been seen in a few things. CSI Miami, Always Sunny, Dexter. I love Dexter. Land of the Lost, and I actually saw her in this film. It was called Wicked Lake. And again, she was sexy as shit in that. And she's been featured in Maxim. She's been featured in a number of media publications. She's a very talented actress. She's very well-spoken, and she's here to talk about her role as Sarah. She plays Sarah in the film. So, listeners, on behalf of Blog Talk Radio and Upfront and Straightforward, give it up for Miss Eve Morrow. What's up?
Hey.
Hey. Hey.
So what's going on, Alan?
Hey, see? See, if you were really bold, you would have said, Alan, I bet when you looked at me in Wicked Lake, I bet you at some point you were jacking
off. Well, I started
out,
laughing
you?
When you said that, too. That was my first movie. My first movie. Oh, my
really?
God. But I did it. I did it, too. You know, I had nothing. I'm not ashamed of anything. I had the best time of my life. And really, you know, if you're having fun while you're doing it, then that's what matters most, right?
I'm going to tell you something. I'm just going to keep it real with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked in the entertainment industry. Now, talent is definitely important. And I can tell through a number of your roles and the opportunities you have. And damn, if you don't have a slew of shit coming up on that I saw on IMDb, you cannot complain about being a... This is one woman who can never complain about being a struggling... I mean, I'm sure at some point in her life she might have been a struggling actress, but she ain't sure. She got a whole bunch of projects lined up. But anyway, what I was going
to
say,
you know what
that,
it is? It's not even about being struggling. I think people try too hard out here, and, you know, they're like, love me, love me, love me. But if you know you got it, you know what I mean? And then people want that. They want to see the real you through the character. So, I mean, struggling is just, it's not being yourself. It's not being true to who you are, you know?
What movie was that where, I think it was the movie The Player, if I'm not mistaken. Did you see The Player?
Mm-mm.
That's a good movie. It's
isn't
one of those
it?
Movies that they always say won't work in Hollywood because it's an insider's movie. It's basically a movie about the entertainment industry. It's with Tim Robbins, and it's a bunch of well-known stars in it that are escaping me right now. But there's
a documentary?
Scene. No, it's a fictional film, but it's based on the inner workings of how studio executives work, the whole process of getting a movie made. And one scene, the studio exec, he's talking about different actors for a part, and one of the questions he asked these women who are his colleagues or subordinates, he's like, yeah, he can act, but do you want to fuck him? And, of course,
yeah,
they would nod their head yes on certain actors. And not. So what I was going to say about you is that, yes, you're talented, and that will carry you far. But in addition to that, you got that fuckability factor.
Well, a lot of actors do. You know, you have different roles. You have the femme fatale, you have the girl next door, you have, you know, the prudish girl who hates men. So you got to fall into one of those categories. If you don't, then all you're doing is, you know, like supporting roles through movies. You got to, if you don't fall into one of those categories, then you're never going to really make it to, you know what I mean, a leading role. So I fell into one, I suppose. Maybe it's the best. You know, who knows? We'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, see, your response to this next question will determine how anxious I'm going to be to see this film. Is there at least one? Now, Michael was talking about these scenes that were kind of simultaneously disturbing but still hot. Is there at least one scene?
Yeah, he was being really modest about it. There's some disturbing scenes in there. When Michael had contacted me, he wanted me to read the script and he wanted me to see which role that I identified with most. And another role that I didn't identify with, it's, you know, and she acts with the role of Trevor, the guy who's like a pickup artist or whatnot, like some very, very disturbing scenes. So he's being very modest, but, you know, it's very intense.
Okay, well, what I was going to ask you is, does Sarah have at least one scene where she's just getting fucked?
Well, I can't. The role of Sarah, she had in the past, in the 90s, let's say, she had a relationship with Trevor. You know, she's really headstrong. She's, you know, she's a
very not soft-spoken, you know, like hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. That's like her motto,
yes.
I guess you would say.
Oh, okay.
So when she comes back in, you know what I mean, you're at the edge of your seat, and it's very edgy, very intense. So that's all I could say. So there's a history between them. You'll find out.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Now, before I get into the details of Sarah and some of the other aspects of the movie, when was that point for you, whether it was middle school, high school, whatever, where you said, I think I got the chops to be an actress?
Well, you know, like I was playing my whole life and playing games outside, everything. I was doing school plays, but, you know, I figured I probably about like 15 or so, or maybe even younger, you know. I just figured I wanted to, I thought that I could relate to other characters and I would like to play them in a real sense, you know. Like you see movies and you see actresses and they play characters, but you know they don't really relate. And I figured maybe I have the background, maybe I have like the street smarts, maybe, you know what I mean, to do that. So then I decided that's what I wanted to be.
And I take it you're very passionate about what you do. You totally love what you do. Has there been a role? Excuse me. They always say when you are paying your dues and climbing the ladder, you're always going to have a handful of roles that you just like hate it. You just like, okay, I'm going to do this role because I need the money. But I don't. Has there been at least one role where you're like, God, I hate this role, but damn, it's paying the bills?
Yeah. You know, like, I love film, but some TV roles, it's just like, I grew up in Atlanta. My father's from Sicily, and my diction, my speech, isn't, you know, very well spoken. So in TV roles, it's just like saying the lines, looking at the character. You really don't have a character. You just have reactions and everything. So sometimes when I do TV, I just feel like I'm, you know what I mean? I'm losing part of my soul in a sense. But so TV, more or less, is that for me. When you go to movies, you can express yourself more. You can, you know, give more to the character. Like you do an interview scene or a detective scene, then you're just like straightforward. You got nothing, you know?
Okay. Before
you were an actor too, no?
You said what?
You were an actor too, no?
Oh, what you been doing a little research on your boy?
No, I was listening.
I've done very little acting. When I lived in L.A., I was actually more so pursuing a career as a screenwriter and filmmaker. I did a few short films and acting. I used to, my biggest claim to fame in the entertainment industry, if you can even call it any type of claim to fame, was for about a year and a half, I actually used to do stand-up. And Chicago used to have this major contest called the Miller Lite Comedy Search Contest, where quite a few comics who are now fairly well known had been in that contest or won it, and I won that in 89. Were you familiar with this comic named Bernie Mac?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, he won it, that same contest, in 1990. I won it in 89.
Oh, my God. Look at you.
Yeah, so.
You should have stuck to it, huh?
That's probably the only significant thing I did that was, you know, got some, like, you know, media attention. But other than that, I've done some off Broadway stage productions. I've done a few local, regional, and national TV commercials. And then I turned to, at one point, I wanted to be like a studio head. I wanted to really, but when I saw how much bullshit I was going to have to go through, I was like, oh, fuck that. But then I fell into this, it's interesting, and this kind of relates to the movie, because here I was trying to make it in the entertainment industry, but of course, you know, you still got to pay the bills if you're not getting any entertainment-related work. And what started happening is my brother and different friends was like, dude, you always giving people advice on how to pull the honeys, man, so you should, like, turn that shit into a book. And that's how my book first came about, because...
You have 4 or 5 I saw on Amazon, no?
Yeah, I got 4 books out on Amazon. Yep. My most well-known book is called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. And the gist of that is I describe 4 modes of behavior that I say that all men operate in, which is Mode 1, Mode 2, Mode 3, and Mode 4. I give you a brief gist of each. Mode 2 would be if a guy met you, and for most of the conversation, he's going to concentrate on being polite. He's going to be cautious in his speech. He's going to want to present himself as the well-mannered gentleman slash nice guy. His first objective is to get you to like him and have a favorable impression of him. And then his secondary objective is to ultimately let you know what his desires, interests, and intentions are, but he's usually going to express those in a beat-around-the-bush manner. Now, Mode 2 is not totally bad behavior. The main weakness of Mode 2 is that a lot of guys end up having a half-hour conversation with a woman, a 45-minute conversation, an hour, two-hour conversation with a woman that was entertaining and flattering and all that, but it don't lead to shit.
Yeah.
You know? It's like if, say you were engaged, but the guy didn't see your ring on your finger or you didn't have it on, and he's talking to you for like an hour and a half, and you guys had this wonderful conversation, but then at the end of the conversation, he says, hey, you know, Eve, I'm really attracted to you. I think we should get together. You're like, oh, sweetie, I'm sorry. I just got engaged a couple weeks ago. Now, in your face, what he's going to do is say, oh, okay, that's okay. Well, it was good talking to you, you know, all the same. You're going to be like, okay.
And I always tell women that. Like an hour and a half of his time,
but
yeah.
But to me, and this is what I always tell women, what they don't see usually, to me, if I'm, say, one of his boys, he's going to call me up. He's going to be like, man, I just wasted an hour and a half talking to this honey, man, and she's fucking engaged, man. And he'll even possibly start trying to shift some of the blame to you, like, man, why didn't she tell me she was engaged? And I always say, if I'm his boy, well, did you let her know from the beginning of the conversation that you wanted to connect with? Well, no, you know, I engage in all the, you know, entertaining fluff talk first, and then I say, well, there you go. So anyway, that would be a Mode 2 guy. A Mode 3 guy is even worse than a Mode 2 guy. That would be a guy who would approach you, and his entire conversation would be just basically what I call bullshit small talk. He would not once, either in a direct way or beat around the bush way, let you know that he's attracted to you, wants to connect with. He's basically hoping that you will
he doesn't want failure.
Exactly. He doesn't want rejection. So he's hoping that you will say, God, I think you're really cute. You know, we should have dinner sometime or whatever. He's basically just hoping you're going to take the ball and run with it. And so, yeah, or the second is actually 2 versions of Mode 3. The second version of Mode 3 is a guy who would, say, go to a party or nightclub and just stand against the wall all night. He doesn't approach any woman for
the
same fear.
It's like those high school dances where the guy standing against the wall never did.
Because of the same fear. He has a profound fear of rejection. And Mode 4, which definitely relates to the title of the film, a Mode 4 guy, that's a guy who was previously and or Mode 3, and because he hasn't gotten any of the results he wanted with women, or he feels like he got used and manipulated by a few women who made him think they wanted to date him or fuck him, but really they just wanted to be flattered or wined and dined by him. Now he's just shitty. He's pissed. And he's getting to that, too, where if I'm at a football party with him and we start talking about women, he'll be the guy that says, man, fuck all women. Fuck them all. They all bitches. Fuck them. I don't want shit to fucking do with them. And you look at him like, damn, dude, you need a hug. That's a Mode 4 guy.
That's the definition of misogynist, right?
And, yeah, in my book,
you.
I say when you've entered the Mode 4 zone, that's when you become a misogynist. And, yeah, you're just bitter. And Mode 1, of course, would be a guy who approaches you, and within the first, I'd say, roughly 5 to 10 minutes of the conversation, he lets you know that, hey, I'm not approaching you because I just want to have an entertaining conversation. I'm approaching you because I'm attracted to you, and I want to hook up with you.
Yeah, and females alternately know this, too. You know, if you're letting conversation linger on and on and on, you know, like for the Mode 3 guys or whatever, they know what, you know, what's in the guy's head. You know what I mean? So it's the female's fault as well. They're just, you know, they're letting them fill their ego up or whatnot. So, you know, it goes both ways.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the gist of my first book, is describing those four modes I just told you about. Then I have a book that's similar to the title of my show, called Upfront and Straightforward, Let the Manipulative Game Players Know What You're Really Thinking. And that just goes through a number of what I identify as the manipulative head games that men play with women play with men, and how you can go about trying to identify each of the type of games. Then my third book, which is now my best-selling book, is called, well, since you, it feels like you did a little bit of research on me, you should maybe know this. What is my
three-word phrase? Wait, let me say, mode one.
That's one. That's one thing. But then I have another one that's a little more seductive. There you go. See, I like Eve already. That's my signature phrase. Whenever I'm having a seductive, provocative conversation with a woman, anytime they say something that I think is kinky, highly sexual, or it can even be just something real flattering, I'll usually say, oh, say it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I actually have some women that have T-shirts that say that. Oh, say it again. Now,
well, let me ask you, are you in a relationship?
Serious? No.
No?
No, seriously.
By choice,
like
or
a boyfriend, girlfriend? Yeah, I would say by choice. Part of it by geography, because the last few women I've dated seriously or halfway seriously have always been out of town. So I need to come back to your neck of the woods. I need to come back to L.A. because they.
Well, no,
in LA,
you don't come to L.A. to get a relationship. I found a relationship, but you know, like it takes two people to, you know, like succeed in everything, to push each other and everything, for trust, all that shit, you know. So relationships do work, but you get with the wrong person and, you know, it can have the opposite effect. So, but
yeah,
come
no,
back
no,
to LA.
You...
No, you're in New York, right?
No, I'm in the Chicago region.
Oh, Chicago. You've got good women there. What are you talking about? No?
I ain't going to say this. See, you're going to almost have me saying something bad about, hey, Chicago women, I love you guys. You know I do. You know I got love for you all.
Well, go to Atlanta. My cousins will set you up.
Oh, Atlanta. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of honeys in Atlanta. Yeah, I've seen some women in Atlanta. Yeah. Atlanta got some serious honeys. For sure. Now, okay, well, I'm going to tie my third book kind of into the movie, and we can go to talk about the movie some more, because this is where my personal kind of controversy comes in. And if you've been on the line, you might have heard me talk about briefly with Michael, is that one of the biggest things I'm known for, and it relates to the whole Ooh, Say It Again, is my MO is that most women I meet that I'm attracted to,
mm-hmm.
at some point in my first conversation with them, I'm talking seriously X-rated. I don't do no basic PG-13 type shit. I'll be in a woman's ear telling her I want to lick her pussy, I want to fuck a dog.
Okay,
style.
But let me ask you. It's at a club, and the woman's dressed provocatively, so she's obviously there, like, showing she wants something, right? You're not going up to a girl who's wearing jeans and a T-shirt, right? So it's not like it's out of line.
Oh, no, I disagree with that. No, I've approached women who dress real conservatively and still was like that. See,
the
I don't
thing
go
is,
by...
like, I think when girls dress up and they're wearing short skirts, they're wearing something showing off, you know, like their cleavage, everything, they're asking for it at a bar or a restaurant or whatever. And if I go there with a friend and I'm not dressing that way, I don't get approached by men in a certain way. And I don't, you know, like, I'm not leading off a certain essence for a man to approach me that way. So I've never had that type of interaction with a man. Not that I'm not attractive, not that I'm not, you know, sociable, but that kind of situation's never really happened to me. But you'll go up to a girl and you'll be vulgar in that sense and they're, like, down with it?
Ooh, see, you already said a word. I totally disagree. And see, well, that points to why I'm a controversial figure. Because, see, like, you just used the word vulgar. I don't consider anything I say
vulgar. Well, okay,
tell
me what you say.
I use the word erotic.
Tell me what you say. Let me hear what, give me a line.
Well, this is what I would do. What I do, and this is where my misconception comes in, because a lot of men who haven't read my book and try to take pot shots at me, they say, oh, Alan wrote this book basically telling guys to go up to women and say, hey, you know, my name is Frank and I want to fuck you. No, that ain't how it works. What I do,
yeah.
I don't want to get in all my details because I actually charge for this. This is what I teach men. I charge good money,
yeah.
Actually. But in a nutshell, what I would do, using you as an example, if I saw you, say, in a bookstore,
mm-hmm.
It's been determined by most body language experts that we all have a 3-foot radius that's known as our space, that person's
yeah.
space.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm going to do with you, for example, is I'm a very boldly
see if
get
I
in
allow
space.
You in my 3-foot radius.
And I'm the first thing I'm gonna pay attention to, and this is why I say it doesn't matter how you're dressed, it's more so about your body language. I find that women are gonna do one of three things when you get in their space. The least desirable reaction is gonna be they're gonna either lean away from you or take a step or two back. If you were to
so
do
regardless
that,
of what you say, you go off the body language. So if they're if they're leaning backwards, you're not going to go on and say whatever you were going to say.
There you go.
There
you're
you go. Reading the woman.
So I would approach you and say something like, I don't have an opening line or whatever, but probably the closest thing I have to maybe what could be called a default approach, I would probably approach you and say, so what day next week would you like to share my company, next Friday or next Saturday? And right at that moment, as I'm asking you that, because I'm in your space, I'm going to watch what you do with your body. That's going to be more important
to me
than your
words. But what if I say, hey, I have a boyfriend. What are you going to do?
So if you back off, then I'm going to keep my mm-hmm. conversation PG-13, and I'm probably, and if you say, you know, I got a boyfriend, I'm going to basically say, okay, she ain't interested.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay in the same spot, and we maintain this maybe foot and a half distance, that's when I say a woman's kind of on could go either way. She has a 50% chance she is interested, 50% chance she's not. I'm going to talk to you some more, see if I can quote-unquote warm you up. If I am able to, then I'm probably going to get more provocative. If I'm not able to, again, I'm going to keep the conversation pretty.
But sometimes
getting
too provocative could scare the girl away. So you're feeling off what the girl's doing as well, no?
But here's when when a woman I feel is giving me a green light and when I've had my success. If I approach you and say I'm just generally talking about us sharing each other's company, and then I make a move to whisper in your left ear and you do not move back, you basically welcome that.
Mm-hmm.
As I tell men in my worship, that's
no,
why
I
do probably 80 to 90% of my dirty talk, is when a woman allows me to talk to her in her left ear. That's what I'm going to be like. Like you might say, okay, well, Alan, I'm halfway interested in hooking up with you, but what are we going to do? And
well,
I would lean in
the
ear and say,
a lot of men that are below you, that the men that you're teaching think that women are so innocent and they're not like part of the game or they don't understand that. But women are, you know, they know what's going on. You know what I mean? Like letting someone get so close or the questions or whatever, they know the game, you know? Like you whisper, if I allow you to whisper in my left ear, like, you know, game on. So completely right. I understand.
Okay.
Go on,
okay.
Though.
Okay, well, I got agreement for it. Well, see, the interesting thing is a lot of women, they still, and it's not a large percentage, I would probably say there's more women who are familiar with what I teach and what I do who have actually supported me and applaud what I do than those who have criticized, because they like the fact that I'm all about upfront, straightforward, and honest. I'm not about
mm-hmm.
trying to lie to a woman to get in her pants or try to bullshit or mislead her or manipulate her to get in her pants. I'm just straight up like, hey, I want to fuck.
Well, women do the same thing, too, you know? They do the same thing as men. They're like, I don't want a relationship. This is what I want, you know? So it's the same both ways. But I remember you were interviewing Danielle prior to, and you said there was a number three girl who's I'm not sure what you called her. Like, she just sits there and she lets you, like, think that something's going to go on and actually
doesn't. Oh, there's my four women. Yeah, my four
attention.
Women are the reciprocators,
mm-hmm.
rejectors,
mm-hmm.
pretenders, and time wasters.
Pretenders,
and,
yeah. So you know what I mean? So there's a, yeah, pretenders is usually what you come upon. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you said that because, yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like I tell men all the time, you're going to meet more – This is what I tell men basically in this year. You're going to meet more pretenders than you will reciprocators, and you're going to meet more time wasters than you will rejectors. Because the way I feel,
yeah,
no man
reciprocators
really...
are going to tell you right from the get-go, like, this is what's going on. If you fucking approach a woman who's a reciprocator, then something's going down almost within the first 30 minutes. But, you know, a pretender or whatever, then it's going to go on a little bit. She wants you to, you know, float her boat. She wants you to make you feel good. So it's a fine line, and, you know, you don't know which is which, kind of, in a sense, no?
Well, see, what's happened, why men kind of love me and adore me, but, again, you have a percentage of women who criticize me, and even a handful of men. Here's the kind of situations I've had with pretenders, is I've approached women, say, at a party, nightclub, whatever, and for the first 5 to 10 minutes of the conversation, that woman will be doing everything short of cursing me out. Oh, my God, I don't believe you said that. I don't believe you talked to me this way. I'm not a hoe. I'm not a slut. And blah, 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 blah. And I'll just stand there, or if I'm sitting next to her, sit there, and I'll be just extraordinarily cool, calm, and collected. And then...
But you already know her game.
I,
you know she's going to
switch
it up,
slowly,
you know?
Because I've already scouted her body language. I know what I can get away with. And long story short, a lot of those times, guys who say been eyewitnesses to some approach, they'll see me approach a woman at, say, 10 o'clock, and from 10 o'clock to 10:10 or 10:15, they'll see that woman going off. But by 10:30, 10:45, me and that woman, at minimum, we're tongue-kissing. Sometimes a woman's sucking my dick. Other times I'm fucking serious. That's what made my brother
But everyone says misogynist, and you brought up, because I had even wrote you something before about females hating men, misandry, I believe the word is. There's misogynists, and there's even women or people hating men in a certain sense, too. But in the whole sense, like women, men, the misogyny or whatever, it goes both ways. It's still the same game. Like, it's not like men have the upper hand or men are doing these things to, you know, like women are naive. Women are not naive anymore. You know what I mean? Women know what they want. And it's like Ayn Rand said, the virtue of selfishness. So if she finds something in a man that she wants in a selfish manner, if it's sex, if it's money, if it's this or that, if it's looks, then she will pursue it. You know what I mean? So we're the same beast, women and men. I mean, you guys think we're naive, but really I think we're slightly smarter than you.
Look at you.
We are. We are. Come on. You got to admit.
I mean,
women are deceiving. They really are.
Well, I go from one extreme to the other with women, I will say for me. There are some women, I would probably say the majority of women, I agree with you. I know for a fact that they're not naive. And that's why I tell men, I think it's intellectually insulting to approach a woman and pretend like you don't want to fuck her when you know you do.
But women know from the get-go if you do. If a man is approaching you at a bar, what other reason would they approach you other than to have a relationship or to get in your pants or start something like that? No man approaches a woman just to be friends. You know what I mean?
Well, I agree with that. Now, see, me and you might have to just have a separate show that's so we don't have to talk about your movie. We can just talk about stuff related to my book.
I'm down.
Me, you could have like a 2-3 hour conversation just about this whole thing. Because, see, there's so many different thoughts and disagreements people have. Because, okay, like on that thing, when I spoke in London, I had a speaking engagement in London in 2010.
Uh-huh.
And this woman was on stage, and she said what you just said, but then she said something I disagree with. She said, well, me and this other speaker named David, she said, Alan and David, what kind of dog you got?
Pit bull, sorry. He's protective. Hey, this is real fast. Okay, go on, sorry.
She said, Alan and David, I know you're about teaching men how to approach women, but we know when you approach us that you want to have sex with us. Now, if she want to stop right there, I wouldn't have no disagreement. But then she went on to say, I don't feel like they need to say it because we already know it. And I looked at the audience, and the guys kind of started chuckling because they knew where I was going, but I didn't go there just at that moment. because I knew she was going to at some point put her foot in her mouth. And sure enough, the fellow speaker, David, was talking to her about for the next, 10 to 15 minutes. And she started talking about this male friend of hers. And David was like, why do you maintain a friendship with this guy when you know he wants to fuck you?
Exactly. There was a documentary done, and go on. I'll tell you at the end. Go on.
Okay. She said, "Well," she paused, and then she said, "Well, I mean, yeah, I know he." And Dave was like, basically, like, "Don't bullshit. You know he wants to fuck you, right?" And she was like, "Yeah, I know he wants to fuck me." And she said, and he said, "Well, if you know he wants to fuck you, why don't you either reciprocate his interest?" Or reject them, which is what I want all
because
women to
do. Because they want, almost in a sense, I want to feel good about myself. I want this. It's an ego boost for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but they
there
know.
You go. I'm glad you used that word because I talked about that in my last book. My last book is called The Possibility of Sex, How Naive and Lustful Men Are Manipulated by Women Regularly. And so you can say my Mole One book is kind of my overall book, and to a lesser extent, Upfront Straightforward. Ooh, Say It Again is my book that's specifically about interacting with pretenders, and The Possibility of Sex is my book about time wasters. And basically, one of the things I say about time wasters, a lot of time wasters, they want an ego boost. And anyway, she went on to say, she said, well, he never said specifically that he wanted to fuck me. And you had to be there, but I just looked at the audience, like, with this look, kind of, and I had my, like, kind of arms out to the side.
And everyone rolled
and they
their
just
eyes,
lost
like, come on.
They were cracking up. Because I basically went on to say, like, you're full of shit. In one breath, you were just saying that no man, and that's my argument for why man does. Anytime
first of all,
says,
no man wants to be a friend with a woman unless they want to have sex with them, unless there's a relationship. If your guy friend has a girlfriend, then you'll be a friend with them. You know what I mean? But if it's an individual woman, you don't want to have a relationship with them unless you want to have a relation, or sleep with them. There was a documentary done, and all these girls are like, oh, no, he's my friend. I don't think I don't think he's sexually interested in me. And then they interviewed the guys, and all the guys were saying, they're like, no, I hope one day she'll, see me as a partner and realize that, I've stuck around through all their relationships. And this and that, but girls know this, and they keep these guys around, and it's sickening, you know what I mean? And they pretend to be these innocent bystanders. They're like, oh no, they just want to be a friend, but it's not true. Like, we know what's going on. They want an ego boost, and that's exactly what it is,
I'm gonna end up when you're in between acting games. I'm gonna take you on tour with me because I can tell you. See, you're feeling me. I love when talking to women like you because you're feeling me because I was just talking about this like 2 or 3 days ago. Me and a friend were talking about it because I just cannot stand the women you were describing in that that documentary.
Uh-huh.
I cannot
stand. They're all like college
stand.
Kids and everything, yeah.
Women who say, well, I got this friendly brain, and I can tell you with confidence, he does not want to get in my pants.
Mm-hmm.
He really enjoys it.
But
bullshit.
Know, it's just like an ego boost. It's bullshit. And you know what? Like, I consider myself a feminist, but the thing is, like, it's those type of girls who are actually the ones that we're fucking are doing the worst, and those are the girls who are calling, we talk about misogynists, but the real misogynist is a woman. A woman calls a woman a whore for stripping, or calls a woman, they hate women for doing whatever they, even prostitution or showing their body or this or that, and they hate women. And really, women are the ones who really against women themselves. So the roles have turned. It's not men. Men aren't asking us to be in the kitchen anymore. It's the women who hate the other women, And it's just crazy. It's a, it's a long thing to get into, but,
you got a good head on your shoulders. You're very, I can see why you say women are not naive anymore, because I can tell you are not naive
and you know what? You know when I said I go to bars and I'm dressing like jeans and a T-shirt, no man approaches me because I don't give those signals. And when women get those signals, men approach them. You know what I mean? And so it is. We know what to do, and we know how to sit. If you sit, like, open with your back towards the outside of the bar, you know you're asking for someone to approach you. If you sit and you don't make eye contact, no one's going to approach you. We know what's going on. We're not naive. But we want to play this naive character, you know, to make the man feel bad. But, you know, like, we've got to – women are smart. So we've got to start making ourselves not seem so – we're stupefying ourselves. You know what I mean? And we're – yeah, so go on.
Well, again, I agree that a good number of you all are, and even I might say most of you are. I would never say all women are not naive and not – because there are women I meet on – again, related to what we were just talking about. I know women who genuinely think that some men – are their quote-unquote friend, and I always challenge them. I say, okay, next time you're around that friend, offer him some pussy and see
if he's
lying.
They're lying. Come on. They do not genuinely think that.
No.
What I mean?
Here's where I disagree with you.
Like, if it's a guy friend and maybe, like, she knows the girl or the girlfriend of the other guy friend or something, but just a guy friend or whatever, like, you don't have just guy friends unless they're, like 50 years older than you or it's, like, a business relationship. I mean, just a guy friend, you know what's on their mind. And 90% of the time, statistically, it says that guys want a relationship with a woman if they're a friend. So, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I'm
going to
tell you this one
story,
and then we'll move on to something else. But I had a woman who was just one of those type of women. She was like, Alan, not all men are like you. They don't just want to get their dick sucked. They don't want to fuck. Like, I had this friend so-and-so. Let's call him Larry. I had this friend Larry. We've been friends for like 9-10 years, and not once has he tried to make an advance. I said, not once. She said, no. I know for a fact he's my general friend. So I had this challenge I give women. I say, okay, this is what you do. Now, only a third of the women I know have taken me up on the challenge, and she ended up being one
because
of them.
Because they know the truth.
But I say, next time you're around that particular male friend, say to him, hey, you know, I'm in between relationships. You're in between relationships. I just get so horny. I was wondering, can we, like, fuck maybe, like, 3 to 5 times a month minimum as long as we're both in between relationships, no strings attached? And I always tell women, I say, you're going to get 1 of 3 responses. Response number one, before you finish asking that question, he's going to have his clothes off and have his dick near your mouth.
Yep.
Response number two, a guy's going to give you a soliloquy. He's going to say, hey, you know, Linda, Michelle, I respect this friendship. I really cherish the time we spent as friends, blah, 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 blah. But when it's all said and done, he's still going to want his dick out, his fans. Then I say the third reaction is going to be a guy's going to go, ew, that's like thinking about having sex with my sister. Oh, my God, that's gross. And I say only reaction number three is representative of your true, genuine, purely platonic-minded
friend.
The other two, they just was waiting for the right moment. So anyway, going back to this woman, she had been friends with this guy for like either 10 years or close to 10 years. She ended up taking me up on the challenge. She called me, and it shows me that she must have been genuinely naive and not just playing the role of naive. She was almost crying. She was almost crying. She was like, Ella, I can't believe it. I said, what's wrong? You were so right. All this time I thought he was my genuine friend. I said, before she could even tell her, I said, he had reaction number one, didn't he? She's like, yeah. I mean, I just started talking about it. He just like lunged at me.
What did she do? Did she run out of the house?
No, she just ended up telling him, you know, if she was just, you know, joking, and he did, you know, he calmed down, I guess. But he just lunged.
How old was she? She was young? She was a kid?
No, she was like in her early to mid-30s.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's some good girls out there. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't met any yet, but maybe.
So let me ask you, I started this whole interview with you talking about your fuckability. And, you know, people always who haven't worked in the entertainment industry, I think you probably already know, they're always fascinated by love scenes, sex scenes. Now, of course, the kind of what I call cliche response, most recently with The Wolf of Wall Street, you know, everybody's like, mm-hmm. well, they're always more awkward than they look, and, you know, we actually don't like them, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, on both ends, number one, have you done a nude scene, love scene, simulated sex scene that when that shooting day was over, you were like, God, I'm glad that's over. That was so fucking awkward. Then on the flip side, have you had a love scene, nude scene, sex scene where you're like, damn, huh? If the director would have gave us a green light, I would have gone ahead and fucked this dude.
To tell you the truth, okay, you saw Wicked Lake, which is the first one, which was, you know, it was girls
yeah.
and everything like that, which was totally, you know, nothing happened afterwards. Everyone was awkward, and I tried to make it as comfortable as possible. I've had a couple of scenes, you know, like kissing guys, even in plays and everything like that. And to tell you the truth, it's not as, because there's camera crews, there's everyone around, there's, you know, the guy worrying about his wife, and then, you know, like, you don't want anyone to think anything's up. So it really doesn't, it's not, nothing really progresses. I mean, you hear, like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith and how that all happened, but I think that happens behind the scenes, more or less, and while filming, you know? Like, the sex scenes while filming, it's so technical, and this spot and that spot, and you have to do this, and, you know, camera A, camera B. So, I mean, you'd think that it would be really, you know, like, intense and everything, but it's actually, it's less. I mean, it's not what you think it would be. Like, people are like, oh, I want to be an actor. I can make out with this person. I can do the love scene with this guy. And, you know, it makes it more awkward towards the other person. You know what I mean? It really doesn't do it. So I think it's an opposite effect completely.
Well, the
me,
first time I got curious was years ago, and I'm going to date myself because I know you're much younger than I am, but have you ever heard of this movie called Angel Heart?
Yeah.
With Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
Where De Niro, where De Niro was basically the devil? Well, long time ago, Lisa Bonet, who used to be on The Cosby Show, and this actually raised controversy at the time.
She's so beautiful. But go on.
She was in that movie, and she was on Arsenio, who's actually, interesting enough, now back on air. But she was on his first version of his show on I noticed he likes to ask actresses and actors about whenever they're in the movie that involves, like, a sex scene. And she was asking her, he was like, you know, I don't remember the exact words, but paraphrasing, he was like, you know, you've been raising a lot of controversy. I heard Bill Cosby is mad at you and blah, 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 blah. And she ended up saying, she said, no, I don't think I'll do a scene like that again because I'm engaged now, because at the time I think she was engaged to Lenny Kravitz. And
well, that's the
he
whole
said,
thing.
Anyway, she went on to say, she said, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't have sex with a guy in a movie again. And I said, I was like, oh, wait
because
a minute.
Because she was engaged.
I thought you just act like you had sex. And she, to anybody's mind, she was like, basically like, no, we actually fucked. And they bleeped it out.
There are some
movies
that I've heard that they've actually gone into and everything. You know, it's never been like that for me, but, you know. I guess some people are extremely method and everything. But, you know, like, I'm in a relationship right now, and, you know, we totally trust each other. And, you know, like, my boyfriend's a photographer. He shoots new girls. He does this. He does that. But I'm not going to get in the way of, you know, his career path and his passion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's got to be a trust thing. It's got to be complete trust, you know? And besides,
so
most of the time, if you're kissing an actor, I'm usually not interested in him. You know what I mean?
Now, you said, well, you can't really talk about Sarah too much because you said it messed up the movie. But so, Sarah, without giving away too much of the, I don't know, the specific nuances of Trevor, the main, I guess, misogynist.
Yeah.
What was your take, either through Eve's eyes or the eyes of Sarah? What's your kind of assessment of Trevor?
So when I read the role of Sarah, when I read the script, I read Sarah, and it didn't, personally for me, it didn't relate to me, you know, but it related, I thought of a lot of girls that I grew up around and a lot of things that had happened to other girls, like in situations, and, you know, like I felt like I could portray Sarah in a genuine way, you know what I mean? being with a guy named Trevor, this guy Trevor, who's a misogynist or whatever you'd like to call him or whatnot. So when I read that role, I was like, I definitely want to play that. And, you know, like I want to, give off the emotions that all these other girls are holding in. The relationship between Sarah and Trevor was a very brief relationship, and it was it takes you to a flashback of what had happened in the past between them, and it kind of sets the stage as to why Trevor, John Brindle, is the way he is.
Oh, so
Sarah
made him a misogynist.
Well, I mean, he was already slightly a misogynist, but, you know, there was one point that triggered, and, you know what I mean? And then that hatred towards women, you know what I mean? The part of the movie, that hatred started probably right from there. So I believe, you know, and that's why it's so important to bring that back from the early 90s as to why certain things happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's a guy's a guy. Yeah. Go on. Ask me another question.
Well, no. I mean, you're making a good point
on,
because
yeah.
One of the things I tell women is, like, when I was telling you about the different four moles, and we were talking about specifically mole four being represented in a massage, I basically tell both men and women, no guy is just, like, born a misogynist. There's always going to be either a specific incident or a series of incidences that provoke.
You were talking
that.
About serial killers in the previous interviews, like all those people who either have this relationship, like Ed Gein, you know, the guy from, what's that movie? Ed Gein, I don't know, like his mother, I forgot the name of the movie.
Psycho?
Yeah, Psycho. Like, he had this relationship with his mother. So there's two types of misogynists, ones who hate women or ones who think they're like their mother. But, like, all real misogynists, they have this connection, like, this real hatred towards women. So there's something that makes them really hate women. And it is like a serial type, you know, killer instinct in their brain. You had talked about that in the previous interviews with, I believe, Danielle and the director as well. Did you not?
Well, briefly, I'm going to send you this link after this interview. I write these articles for TheExaminer.com, and I wrote an article recently that kind of at least indirectly relates to the theme of misogyny, because I talk about what's called the 80-20 theory, which asserts that if you put 1,000 women, single women, in a social environment with 1,000 single men, instead of them matching up one by one and becoming 1,000 couples, what's going to happen is roughly 80% of the women are going to gravitate towards the top 20% of the most desirable men. So what's going to end up having, the end result is you're going to have a small percentage of men that are going to have more than their share of women competing for their attention, while you got other men who ain't getting any attention from women.
It's the virtue of selfishness. Anne Rand, you know, who wrote Fountainhead, you know, what the women are looking for is they're looking for someone who's good on paper, they're looking for looks, they're looking for someone who can support them, which is, you know what I mean? And the rest of them get just, you know, pushed away in a sense.
Yeah, and I say those guys who are getting just blatantly ignored, they ain't getting no pussy, they're going to become misogynists,
because
they're going to be like, this is bullshit. They're going to be like, why am I jacking off every day and every weekend and this other motherfucker fucking three or four different women a week? And,
but that's the reason why you're here, too. Those are the men that need your help. Like, why
you
they
hit it on the
girls
head.
Is because that's why they don't know how to approach them. They don't know how to, you know, sell themselves in a certain way. It is. It's you have to sell yourself. It's advertising. You know what I mean? Like you said in movies, and you were, like, talking about sex and why I do so many movies or whatever, sex sells. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
And even in relationships, you have to advertise. Everything is advertisement. And these men that are sitting in the background who none of the women are approaching, they just don't know how to advertise themselves well. And that's why you have these books to show them how to advertise themselves. You know, how to say, this is my, you know, this is what I'm worth, and this is why you should be with me, you know?
Listeners, I only have about one or two questions left, but I wanted to tell you, at the three-hour mark in the chat room, it's probably just going to cut off So if it does, you'll be able to hear it. If I go over, you'll be able to hear it on the archive podcast. But it's probably going to cut off in about 2 minutes. But I'm about to wrap up anyway shortly. I got just a couple more questions. One, this is away from the movie kind of. What's, like I noticed Danielle, when I interviewed her, she said she's so career focused, she doesn't really get into dating. And you said you're in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What are maybe 2 to 3 criticisms that you have of single women's behavior towards men in today's dating scene, and 2 to 3 criticisms of single men's behavior towards women?
Single women, they, in a sense, sometimes they're too needy. Like, if the single woman is always trying to get a man, it's too needy, and then they put themselves out, like, they give too much information, like, right from the get-go, you know what I mean? And then it turns the guy around, you know what I mean? The guy doesn't want that. They're like, oh, I want babies, I want kids, I want this, I want that. At my age, I'm 32 years old, so usually the single women I know, like, right when they get a gate or a date, it's like everything's out in the open. It's just too much, and ex stories and dating nightmares and everything like that. And with men, you know, like men around my age, like their problems, you know, they cross lines too much. You know, they stare at the woman's breasts. They look at their cell phones. They have their wives drop them off at the date. You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
Okay, that was good feedback. Now, when do you expect the movie to be released in at least a few movie theaters?
I'm not sure. I have no idea on that. I'd like to know soon. So, I've heard really good things, and I have to be honest, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen my scenes and everything, but because I was shooting another film, but I've heard people were at the edge of their seats, and it's really, it's like
Hello? Hello?
You hear me?
No, you went blank for a while. I don't know what happened.
I know. I was like, hello, hello, hello.
Huh, that was weird.
I'm here.
Okay. Oh, you said you saw your scenes, and then that's, after that, I didn't hear anything.
I saw my scenes, and I saw my scene, and then I got feedback from the director, and they said everyone was up the edge of their seats. The movie's really grimy, and it's kind of like a twist between a Woody Allen movie and Quentin Tarantino. So it's really like, you know, like grimy, you know, like, which is great too. You know, like the characters are really well developed, and Michael is a phenomenal director. Like, there's a couple of movies he has coming up that I'm going to be in. Like, he's going to be the next Woody Allen. So, he's great.
Well, I might have to throw a couple of scripts his way and collaborate with that dude, too.
You will. You will. He's got people behind him. He's got money.
Hello? There it goes again. She just went out. Hmm. Maybe Blog Talk Radio is trying to tell me to end the show right now because I can't hear it anymore. Well, in case she doesn't come back, Eve, I want to wish you nothing but continued success in your career. I hope the movie does well. I cannot wait to see it. Listeners, join me next week. It's going to be a barn burner of a conversation. You don't want to miss it. So have a safe and enjoyable weekend, and I will talk to you next Thursday.